The views expressed on PFW in Progress are not those of the New England Patriots, its affiliates, or any of its partners. Content may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The following takes place between 12 p.m. and 2 p.m.
This is PFW in Progress.
The quarterback. Two receivers lined up to the left, one to the right. There's a flanker lined up to the left behind the quarterback.
Okay. Now,
he gives the ball. No, he doesn't. He doesn't get the ball. The receiver goes all the way over there to the left. Once the quarterback has the ball, he fakes to the left. No, he fakes to the right. He doesn't fake. He thinks about fake. He pretends to fake.
PFW in Progress with Fred Kirsch.
It's not like you could use a shower. Oh, listen, you can think what you want about my personal hygiene, but please don't waste any water. That's bad policy.
Paul Perillo.
So that's what opening up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.
And Andy. And Andy?
There, girl, you're seeing.
Seeing? I see a lot of girls. I see a lot of guys, too.
I think that's sexy. You ever been with a guy and a girl at the same time?
Oh, yeah, plenty of times. The other night, I was with my mama and Coach Klein at the same time.
Andy Hart.
And I like Vicky, and she likes me back. And she showed me her boobies, and I like them too.
Eric Scalavino.
I want you to think about all those mean people. They're going to be your tackling fuel.
Tackling fuel.
We're going to use them to play football.
Tackling fuel.
For now, anyway.
Ooh, I'm a football player.
Coach, I'd like to tackle him right now.
PFW in Progress, part of the Patriots Football Network.
Ryan Tannehill and the Dolphins today prove the tougher of the two AFC East rivals in the end. Miami wins it again by outscoring the Patriots in the second half, 23-0.
Oh, no! We suck again!
All right, welcome to PFW in Progress. The gang is all here, minus Eric. And we've got a lot to talk about here, starting with the Patriots' opening season loss to the Miami Dolphins, 33-20. It was ugly. That second half was perhaps one of the worst halves of football we've seen in this parts in a long while. We're going to get into all that. Of course, the big story yesterday, Ray Rice. I'm sure people I've seen from the emails want to chime in on that. We'll do that. You know, that's what we're here for. But first, we have to deal with this loss. As a fan base, we have to come to grips with the fact that our team sucked in the second half. We just lost it on both sides of the line. It was awful, especially when you go into the half with a lead like that. And it looks like your defense is, you know, doing a pretty good job keeping them down. Offense had fits and starts, but, you know, when they got their rhythm, they were moving the ball pretty well. Then you come out in that second half, and I don't know what it was. You know, both teams were playing in the same weather, but the Patriots came out flat. They just could not tackle. They could not stop the run. They could not block for Brady. They could not open holes for the runners. Really, I think the game was lost in the trenches, in my opinion. And, you know, when you lose those battles, you have no shot. And that's when teams get dominated, when you lose the trenches. That's when domination happens. And the Patriots, as we heard Bob Soucy in the opening, 23-0 outscored in the second half. Just absolutely ridiculous. It was almost like the first half of that Broncos game last year in Foxborough before the Patriots woke up in the second half. They just could not do anything that second half. But for those people who are saying, that's it, season's over, they stink, the defense is the same as it's always been, I don't know how you can say that. I don't think we were wrong in our preseason evaluation of this defense. I still think that this defense is going to be better than we've seen in the last few years. And I think they're going to figure out what to do against the run. And I think that, you know, they didn't look terrible in pass coverage. So I am not so much worried about that. I think they're going to be able to figure this out. So I don't know. That's not really a pep talk. So, because I have no explanation for what happened in that second half. It was just absolutely ridiculous. Andy, Paul, you want to chime in?
Are we allowed now? You gave us the stop sign to start the show.
I just wanted to, go ahead.
Yeah, you're right. It sucked. I mean, they sucked. Now,
I've had doubts all along, you know, about this defense being, a lot of people think it's going to be elite, top three in the league, greatest ever, Belichick, blah, blah. I have had doubts along the way, and I obviously continue to have those doubts coming out of this game. I don't know how anybody couldn't have doubts about where this defense is going. The biggest issue for me is what you said, the trenches. This is just the ass whooping. And I think I'm most concerned on the offensive side of the ball, but not because what people have been talking about, not because of the movement inside. I think I'm most concerned that Sebastian Vollmer and Nate Solder weren't very good. And those are our young, yeah, upcoming, you know, second team all pros. One guy already got his money. The other guy's going to get his money in the next year or two. That is a little, now I wanted to ask you, since you're good at these excuses slash reasons, can we give the tackles the excuse that they weren't comfortable with the guard working next to them, so they sucked at tackle?
No.
Kind of like you do with McCoy?
No, because when I saw them get beat, it wasn't even like a communication thing between
physical
guard and tackle. It was a guy just beating a guy to the outside.
Yeah, that worries me.
And to prove your point, Andy and I were talking before the show about the conference call yesterday with Bill Belichick. He would agree with you. He said it was not communication issues. It was fundamentals and techniques. They were getting beat.
Yep.
Man for man, they were getting beat. And
when they knew their quarterback already had a calf injury.
The reason why that worries me more is because I don't think that's easily fixed. Now, I'm not saying that all the guys that played on Sunday, that's as bad as they are. That's what they are as players. But I have to be realistic here. I don't know what Jordan Devey is. I don't know if Josh Klein is any better than that. He was inactive. I don't know what Marcus Cannon is as a guard because I really haven't seen it. He wasn't very good in that game at guard. You know, Ryan Wendell, it would appear that they're looking to move away from because they re-signed him as a free agent and he is yet to sort of solidify his spot as the starting center, and he didn't start at center to open the game. They had Conley there. So it looks like they're trying to move away from him. I'm not sure those kinds of things can just get fixed. I think Solder and Vollmer are better than they were on Sunday, but I agree with Andy.
Hope so.
They both were terrible on Sunday.
Quick breaking news.
Especially, I thought, Vollmer.
Yeah.
This quick breaking news. You see the Bills are apparently going to be sold to the Buffalo Sabres owner.
Yeah.
The deal is in place as we speak.
Do you think part of the problem for the Patriots offense on Sunday, by the time we got to the second half, was that Miami wasn't afraid of getting beat by Brady? Not that Brady was having a bad game, but that there wasn't things that he was going to do when, you know, to beat our pass rush, in other words. He just didn't have the weapons or whatever they saw from our offense they weren't afraid of.
Oh, I would agree with that.
You know?
I also thought they were very confident in themselves. And I thought Cameron Wake talked a lot about that post game. It wasn't just, you know, I'm not afraid of him in that offense. And we're going to go get him. That's what we do. Yeah. We're going to go kill him.
And they didn't have to blitz, which is always key. And I think it was Audrick that someone had asked him, because, I mean, obviously, you look at it, the Patriots had an 80-yard touchdown drive and a 94-yard touchdown drive in the first half. So they did something offensively early on that they weren't able to do in the second half. So what changed? What did Miami do different? Why? And they insist nothing. Now, I don't know. Only they know for sure. But Audrick sort of had that question. I was reading some of the transcripts Sunday night when Andy and I were done with the postgame show, and he got that question, and he called over to somebody. He said, "Hey, Andy, what did we do different in the second half?" And the guy, and they just started laughing. They were like, "Nothing. We just played better than we did in the first half." And I'll tell you what's sort of alarming. It's one thing if you just sort of you play a bad game, and you know the other team's hot. Do you think Miami was hot Sunday? I mean, like as a team, not in terms of the weather.
I thought it was like 100, Paul. So yeah,
not in terms of the weather. I don't mean literally, figuratively. I think offensively they blew a ton of chances to score. Defensively, they were missing their three starting linebackers and one of their starting safeties. That's four starters were out of the game in the first quarter, and you couldn't muster a point in the second half.
Yeah,
that to me is really alarming.
I mean, again, whether it's them doing something well or the Patriots doing something poorly, Miami ran the ball really well. Mm-hmm. I mean, they blew the Patriots off the line. So if you want to mark that up to Miami playing well or the Patriots playing poorly, Miami was doing that well. Yeah. And then I thought in the second half, I just thought their defense was swarming, faster, stronger.
They looked faster than the Patriots all day,
yeah,
I thought.
You know, and so, you know, that's kind of the thing I was thinking about in the NFL is, you really can't stop a quarterback from passing and completing passes. You can't cover guys all day. And it just seems to me the teams that are having success lately are ones that can get to the quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And it's not shutting down receivers. It's getting to quarterbacks.
I think that's the only way that you can consistently stop an offense.
Right.
Like, Seattle doesn't do it just because they smother you everywhere. They do it in all ways.
Right.
They get after the passer. Their linebackers are quick to the ball. And obviously, Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas are good in the secondary.
And we've seen it even if you just want to go by finances. J.J. Watt and Mario Williams are the last $200 million men. They're defense, that's what you get. Cornerbacks, even the top cornerbacks are only getting, what, 60 50, million?
60.
Something like that. Defensive ends who can get after, even back to when Mario Williams was drafted. The whole reason they said they drafted him was to deal with Peyton Manning. That was the way you had
you know,
to try
and
to
so,
win.
You know, and the NFL goes in cycles. You know, teams start doing this, then other teams, you know, react and they start changing their personnel. I think the next wave of personnel.
Fullbacks.
No. Well, close. I think the next wave of personnel and where money might start flowing a little bit is offensive line. If you can't stop these guys from.
Well, offensive line's flowing pretty good.
Well,
yeah, I mean,
Tyron Smith got $100 million this offseason.
I think those guys are. I don't want to say overpaid, but those guys are getting paid.
I thought for sure you were going to go with. The old Hannah thing. We're just going to run at him now, these undersized athletes.
Well,
we're going to run right at him.
Three years ago was the offseason of the guard. Remember? Like every guard seemed
right.
like
Hutchinson,
they got a five-year, $50 million contract.
Right.
Including our guy, who got the highest one. But Jari Evans and Mankins, and then forget the tackles. Andy's right. Tyron Smith just got $100 million.
But it seems to me if I had to have the perfect blueprint to beat Tom Brady, it would be we're going to run the ball effectively, shorten the game, and we're going to get at Brady on defense.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you beat the
without
Patriots.
Without blitzing. That's what it's been, and that's what they did. Now, flipping it to our defense, and I think Paul was right. We talked about this in the Xbox One postgame show. I thought the Dolphins always looked faster, and we got a little bit of a problem if we're going to be undersized on defense and slow. You're not supposed to be undersized and slow. If you're undersized, you're supposed to be fast. And if you're big, okay, now maybe you're slow. But you're fielding two defensive ends in the 3-4 and Chandler Jones and Joe Villano, who are a little bit undersized. So, yes, they might get pushed around a little, but they should be quicker. We didn't look any quicker than anybody, and we were getting pushed around.
And by the way, bring up Chandler Jones. Those were clear penalties.
Obviously.
Clear.
To everybody except Scott Zolak
and Michael Holly.
I thought the Hightower one was questionable. I was upset they called
that
one.
I don't like the rule.
But Chandler Jones absolutely made contact to the head.
Twice.
I actually.
Yeah, you're right.
I said this in the postgame show. I think there's a chance you could see those hits on a video showing what you're going to get penalized for.
If you hit
a guy in the head, that's what you're going to get.
I'm on the plane, and after every game on the road, I have to go through all the photos and pick the ones for the newspaper. And there was one of Chandler Jones with his forearm
right in the
throat. In his throat.
I think the Globe had that, or the Globe or the Herald, one of them. And I kind of chuckled, and it's funny because we haven't talked about this, you and I, and we always do.
Right.
And I saw that picture, and I was thinking to myself, I wonder if Fred's going to think this was a bad call. And we hadn't talked about it, so.
Usually the ones I show you are the ones where the Patriots are being held, and I'm like, that's not a hold?
Well, and I also, there's another one that I saw. It had a picture of, it might have been one of the Today's papers. It had a picture of a guy grabbing Brady. Remember the play that was Brady was all, guy had him by the shirt, and
yes.
He stayed up, and he just threw it away?
Yes.
But he was, like, in the grass for, like, 5 seconds.
Right.
But he never was like under control, and they it was the right call not to.
And he could have died.
But we were thinking
to
ourselves, blow the whistle.
Right.
Maybe Indy and I are going, blow the whistle, blow the whistle. But he and I was thinking, oh, Fred probably thinks that's holding. Look, he's got his shirt.
Now, I want to get your take because there's been some differing opinions on one Darrell Revis in Revis Island. I thought he was underwhelming. I was disappointed. I'm not saying he stunk. I'm not saying he looked like...
He was average, and I'm expecting better than that.
If you're going to match up with Mike Wallace, you should not... I don't care if you say he's the fastest in the league. You're supposed to be the best corner in the league. And I thought he got beat on that double move, which he was fortunate they didn't complete. He kind of drifted out of bounds. I thought he was trailing on a couple throws early. I didn't see... You know, you like to use the word transformational defensive player? I did not see a transformational defensive player lining up at cornerback for the Patriots.
Well, no, not in that game, but I still think he's better than anything we've had.
I think Aqib Talib was better last year.
Do you think he played better on Sunday. Going forward.
No, no, no. I think, better.
Because we can start our analysis by saying, listen, it's week one. No one's jumping ship.
Right.
Here,
no.
Okay? But I'm just talking about Sunday with Revis. I was expecting more.
Right. Yeah. But I still say, as even though he wasn't up to what we are expecting, he's still better than I think even Aqib Talib was.
Not last year.
I disagree.
Oh,
totally.
I think so.
Totally. Couldn't disagree anymore.
You know what he looked like? You know what he looked like to me? He looked like Aqib Talib in the Cleveland game last year.
Yeah.
That's what he looked like, a guy who got beat occasionally. Now, the only difference between the Josh Gordon one that he came across the field and took to the house was that Tannehill put it 8 yards behind him, made him turn around and catch and get off stride, so Revis made the tackle. If that ball was put on Wallace, he's still running.
Yeah,
that happened several. Tannehill was awful in that game.
That is a good positive. You want to spin that? Tannehill is who we thought he was. He's still just a young,
and that's a good sign. That is a good positive because that
they don't
that
have means, their quarterback. They
that
don't
means
have
Miami doesn't have the guy because he was terrible in that game. And that's part of what was alarming to me is I think they ran the ball well, like you said, Fred, Miami, and I didn't expect them to run the ball for 200 yards like that.
No, it's a game play.
But Tannehill had all kind. They left so many points on the board. They killed. Listen, I mean, they kicked field goals. Miami did of 24, 22, and 27 yards. That's terrible. That's a game that you lose. That's your Andy. You write the analysis.
Football math.
You lose.
7-3 every time.
And they still won.
I thought that in the first half, the Patriots, you know, there was a wide open Julian Edelman that I don't know where Brady threw that ball.
Well, Brady was off. Don't tell me that calf didn't bother him. He was off.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the calf or what.
It was the calf.
I mean, he just did not look. You know, right.
Didn't you know, what was the stat you had from ESPN? 12 of 16?
Two of 16.
12 of 16 would have been good.
two of 16, or it might have been two of 18, of more than 15 yards. And since the Stats Inc., ESPN Stats, has been tracking that, I think the mid-90s, it was the worst single
game. You rarely see Brady associated with anything. The worst.
And, you know, I think Gronk was really kind of not a non-factor, but not the factor we would hope for the amount of snaps he had.
I would call him a non-factor. I mean, listen, maybe
I actually think he might have been a detrimental factor because Brady seemed to really want to get him involved and zero in on him and was forcing throws to him. And Gronk looked not fluid. You know, I used that in the thing I wrote on the web. They said they opened the game with Evan Washburn, sideline reporter. Rob Gronkowski's situation is fluid in terms of playing time. He was anything but fluid.
Well,
he didn't look good.
And I think one of the big deals was when Brady looked his way, usually Gronk gets open. You know, it might be just a step, but when Gronk gets open by a step, that's a big open because of his range. He wasn't that open.
And they were focused on him. It's not like they were waiting to see if he was involved. The Dolphins clearly said, we're not going to let Gronk beat us. Thank you for telling us on Monday you're going to play. We've prepped all week to make sure we don't allow you to beat us. But
ooh.
What?
Bringing up more controversy.
That
nope,
said,
not happy.
He scored a touchdown, and if Brady hit him, he might have scored another one late that gives you an onside chance. You know, I thought he was open down the seam, and if he catches that at the 6 or wherever it is,
they ain't getting him
with
down.
His size, he's probably not getting tackled. So now you're looking at he's part of the reason for your comeback, and he's got 2 touchdowns. That's how good he is. He can suck, and he's still
have an impact.
But
here's one thing that, you know, that I don't like. The first game back last year in New York, and I'm probably going to get the numbers wrong, but I think
probably not because you're Paul.
I think he was targeted 17 times.
I bet he was targeted 17 times, Fred.
In the Jets game, that first game that he played, and again, it was the same kind of thing. He wasn't himself. I think less than half of them were complete, but he almost made an unbelievable. Almost made an unbelievable catch that would have won the game at the end of regulation.
Remember that.
This game, he's targeted 11 times
for 4 catches.
Clearly, less than half of them completed. Clearly, not himself. First play of the game. First third down of the game was thrown to him. Right. He looked like a robot.
Right.
I'm a little worried.
He looked all stiff. And I'm not. This is not a criticism of Gronk, so don't take it the wrong way.
I put that one on Brady, though.
But when I am, too. That's what this whole thing is about.
No,
why are we targeting him so much when he's clearly not ready?
I'm not worried about the production. I'm worried about how he looked.
He didn't look
visibly
good.
I didn't like what I saw. He just looked like he lacked athleticism. Like, everything looked stiff or restrained or cumbersome. I continue to hate the black thing on his arm because I do think that limits some of his athleticism and mobility. And then the leg, he wasn't quite. I didn't like what I saw. I'm concerned.
Yeah. I mean, Tim Wright LaFell was a big disappointment. I went into that game saying that for the Patriots to win this game, and I said it to No Socks. He was sitting right next to me.
Well, then he means it. When he says it to No Socks, that means something.
The carries a lot of weight.
You know, for the Patriots to win this game, LaFell has to have 5 catches.
Well, I hope you don't go into any other game thinking that. And I'm being dead serious.
Because we're going 0-16.
No, but I really felt that Brady had to spread that ball around, and he just couldn't do it. I mean, Edelman.
Oh, yeah, it was last year all over again.
Yeah, Edelman had 9 catches in the first half and 0?
Six.
He had 6 catches.
He had 9
6
attempts,
catches for 90 yards.
Yes.
Yeah. And
but it was last year all over again because it was all, I'm going to throw to Gronkowski, I'm going to throw to Edelman, I'm going to throw towards Gronkowski.
Right.
He didn't catch them all. And also the question of what happened to Edelman in the second half. Where'd he go?
Now, Tompkins was okay, but I think when Tompkins doesn't have the ball, he's kind of a detriment.
Yeah, and I don't think Tompkins was okay either. He did nothing.
He had a bad penalty that.
Well, I mean, 5 for 10 for 37 yards. 5 catches out of 10 targets for 37 yards. Yeah. He did nothing.
And he had a badly timed block that brought back another first down pass by Brady.
That was LaFell.
LaFell.
The pass interference?
Yeah, LaFell.
Yeah. LaFell absolutely cleaned the guy's clock.
Right, too early.
He almost killed the guy.
Yeah.
The guy was knocked up.
Yeah. Brady was complaining about that.
You know,
call
so these wide receivers, other than Edelman, are not helping yet.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at the targets.
Did Amendola play?
Yeah, you know, Amendola. Right. Tompkins had 10. I mean, Edelman only got targeted 8 times, Tompkins 10.
And Edelman not targeted in the second half, right?
He was 6 for 8.
I believe he was
not
targeted.
So he was targeted once because that deep ball was to him that Brady blamed on him. Remember, you got to keep running?
Yeah.
I mean, he might be right. I don't know. But that's what he sort of looked and gestured at it. I think you could read his
lips. Keep running.
Keep running. Maybe he flattened the route out. He was supposed to go toward the flag.
Edelman
I don't know.
He said, throw better.
Amendola, 5 targets. Vereen, 8. And LaFell, 6. 0 for 6.
Ridley was 2 for 2.
Well, you know, they did try. Like
I hit 7 foul balls.
There was some. I got one email. I'm in the middle of doing AskPFW. Where were the screens? You know, we couldn't deal with the pressure. I thought they tried a lot of them. And I'm looking at the running back. Vereen was targeted 8 times. I'm not saying they were all screens, but most of them were. Ridley,
no, he had that wheel route. He didn't catch again.
Ridley had 2, and Bolden had 3 targets. Those are screens. They're not throwing patterns to Ridley and Bolden that aren't screen passes. Now, Vereen, you on an occasional wheel route or whatever, but I think they tried several of those. They didn't get a lot of yards out of them.
Yeah, and there was a lot of that, like, old school kind of just throwing it up there, hoping something happens. There wasn't, you know?
That wheel route that Andy's talking about was kind of
no
I know
shot.
I know I got that linebacker on him. I'm throwing it up there. He wasn't open. He was never open.
No shot, and the ball wasn't even close. It was no shot. You know?
Well, Brady was bad.
Yeah.
I'll get back to I think he was affected by that calf. I really do. When he looks that bad, now we talked about this. He has games where he's off, but a lot of times we find out later there was an injury. You know, the hand last year. Right. Why is he off? Well, how much is the hand bothering him? I think the calf was an issue.
Well, the question is, will it continue to be an issue?
Yes.
How bad is it?
Bad.
You don't know. Why do you say things like that?
He was actually going to say, you know that, like, and then he goes, you idiot. No, but it doesn't go away. It doesn't go away 1 week to the next. It's not miraculously
That's
gone.
My concern is, you know, my theory. NFL teams, they're going to get more banged up. In 5 weeks when the Patriots play, they're not going to be in as good a condition as they are right now.
All right, webradio@patriots.com is email address. 508-298-0398 is the Ace Ticket Hotline.
We didn't even rip special teams
Pats yet. 500. Well, special teams were terrible. Ryan Allen has forgotten how to punt.
And catch.
They can't block.
The snap
was low. He dropped it. He shanked one. He blocked him.
So we're not here to greet you when you come back from one road trip, and this is what we're left with?
No, I mean, it was just a bad day all around.
You bury the ball? Do they need to dig a hole
maybe.
And bury the ball?
Blow it up. Do something.
It's been a decade since they've had to deal with one of these.
Yeah. So, but hey, first game, you'd rather lose the first one than the last one, right?
Well, they got the pressure of going 16-0 off their backs
early.
We don't have to worry about that. Not a talking point anymore. So that's good.
Right.
You know, and they're in last place by themselves for the first time ever under Tom Brady. So that's good.
That's pretty remarkable.
It is.
I'm being serious.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wasn't when I said it's
by themselves.
They started 1-2 a couple of years ago, but they weren't in last place. But the fact that they never lost a game, you know, or even 1-1 and everybody else was 2-0, that's amazing.
Brady has never been in last place
as a starting quarterback until now.
Also, what do you think? He shaved his beard. Is that good?
Sure.
On Twitter, they were saying he shaved Giselle.
How do you take that?
What?
They think he's gay. Thing.
Oh. What?
The beard thing.
I know how you take it.
No, how do you take
it? It was a sign of solidarity for Mankins, and now he realizes he has to move on. And
do you take it like that?
No.
Okay.
I think he realized he looked ridiculous because if you notice, he was shaving like little things on his below his lip, but above his chin. He really looked like he had an ass. Thanks to the little hole he's got, that dimple, it looked like an ass with a hole.
So Andy goes off on a rant on this, and then like literally like a half hour later, you know, Roger Brown, you know, one of our writers,
right?
You know, listeners probably don't know who that is, but he's all of a sudden he turns, he looks, and goes, Andy, you're right. That looks ridiculous. He goes crazy.
Yeah, they were overwhelmed. We should behind the scenes.
Our editorialization, I think, overwhelmed them.
We were watching in the boardroom, and they've been watching, but we've been doing TV all year.
Yeah.
So we come in, they're already sitting there, and we sit in like you can tell in like the first 10 minutes of the game, they're like, are these guys gonna ever shut up?
Like, it was like the third quarter. I looked at Roger. I go, I apologize if I've destroyed your viewing pleasure of this game at all.
That's good. All right, let's get to the phones. They're stacked up. Antoine from Jersey City leads it off. Hey, Antoine.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
Better than the team.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. But my first question is geared towards Fred because I already know how Eric and, not Eric, but how Andy and Paul really feel about this. But Paul had mentioned on the post-game show that under Dante Scarnecchia, this would not have, the old line would not have performed like that throughout the whole game.
Well, no. I mean, since 2007, they've been having games like this.
Yeah, but
so,
not for whole games. And I think that they generally would have gotten it cleaned up a little bit.
And not gotten worse as the game went on instead of getting better.
Yeah.
They got worse as the game went on in terms of pass protection.
It did get worse. It got terrible. And, you know, we talked about the rotation at center, and, you know, whenever that happened, then you push Connolly over to the guard, and Devy would come out, and blah, blah, blah.
That was part of it, too.
Yeah, I think that, you know, we've been told that one of the keys to a good offensive line is continuity, and that was the opposite of continuity on that game.
Now
that's separate from the problem at the tackles, because they were out there the whole game. So
let me ask you a question that I don't know if you can answer or not. We didn't obviously see much of it on TV, but how was the offensive line being handled on the sideline? Was it just Dave DiGuglielmo coaching them? Did Bill go over it all?
I don't know.
Because that was something I want to get a feel for, how much, you know, rope he has to be doing his own thing, or if at any point, if this continues, you know, being that he's a first-year coach.
It's a really good point.
And Antoine brings up a good point because, you know, we do have all the video of Dante on the sideline talking to his, you know, line and, you know,
his whiteboard.
So I'm sure Googe did the same thing, but were they listening?
And was it working?
Was it effective?
Yeah.
Right.
And at any point, we know Bill, I can't even think of when I saw Bill go over and have to do that. He always has been the defense for years now and lets Josh and Dante handle the offense. Is there a need at any point? Will he have to go over there and deal with some stuff?
Right.
And a lot of the Miami guys made mention of how much Brady was yelling at them during the game, yelling at the linemen, you know, which is not I don't mean that as a shot at Brady. It's not atypical of a quarterback.
But it's not good because that's
clearly they couldn't get it fixed.
That's Dan Marino in his twilight. He's just yelling at everybody on every play, you know. That's not a good sign. So we've got to clean it up. All right, Antoine, thanks for the call.
You know what I thought of, too, with the, you mentioned.
Why is Jordan Devy playing?
The constant rotation. Yeah, well, in a larger sense, but the constant rotation. And I expected, we weren't surprised by that. We expected everybody to play. We expected there to be rotations. But clearly, this rotation on the offensive line was different than just keeping everybody fresh. This was the plan going in. We're going to move this guy here, move that guy here. You know, Conley was going to play center and guard. And Wendell was going to come in for this series. That was the plan. Almost reminded me a little of the Jets game, the 16-9 Jets game with the Kevin O'Connell with the grease boards. You psych yourself out before the game.
Right.
I think they spent so much time going into the game. Well, the weather's not going to be a factor. It was a factor, and we clearly were definitely worn down in the second half.
I would like some.
And I wonder if they went into this game with all this, we're going to do all this switching and, you know, almost like it gets in your head. You're, well, it's time for me to come out, right? I'm tired.
You know,
like, Jamie Collins looked completely gassed at the end of the game.
When Noshon Mourinho ran through him for a touchdown?
Yeah.
That's a good point, Paul, because, you know, I was critical of the Super Bowl.
I'm having a good season.
No, in Arizona, I was critical of sort of the approach to the entire Arizona Super Bowl business trip and not maybe having the energy and some of the that you could have had. That's a good point to just simply keep saying, you know, the weather's not going to be a factor. The weather's not going to be a factor. Yes, it is.
Well, of course.
It's 100 degrees. So how about instead of saying it's not going to be a factor, we acknowledge it's a factor and say, but we're going to deal with it the best way possible by doing X, Y, and Z. You can't, you know, whistle past the graveyard or the elephant in the room. Just say, you know, it's going to be 105, but that's not, it was hot. It actually,
Freddie,
yeah, Bill even said it wasn't even that bad.
Really?
Because how many tackles did you make? How much were you running around? You were standing on the sideline. It was hot.
Do you think conditioning was a factor in the game?
Did you
think we looked tired in the second half?
Yeah, it seemed that way.
So
did Darrell Revis get cramped? It seemed that way. And you know what that's from? The weather.
And I'm not trying to make a huge deal out of it, but I think it was a factor. And, you know, Freddie, you weren't with us in Richmond, okay? The second practice in Richmond was a marathon. It was like 3 hours. And it was really hot and humid. It was unbelievable. And at the end of that, Belichick had the whole team run some gassers at the end. And all the writers, of course, and we did it too. This is not a check mark for everybody because we wrote this. Andy and I wrote it too. Oh, this is how you win. And he was yelling. This is fourth quarter. This is how you win. This is how we win in Miami. This is the fourth quarter now. There were players dropping like flies that day.
Darrell Revis being one of them.
And Julian Edelman being another. And Julian Edelman did nothing in the second half. But I don't know if that was because of conditioning. I'm just saying.
That's a good point.
Okay.
The two guys that were most notably affected by the weather in Richmond,
guys were
Darrell Revis
like
tapped
flies.
Out of team drills and was being watered, as Bill likes to say, right. And looked at. And Julian Edelman actually collapsed, fell down.
In other words, what I would say is you sit there and you say, yeah, this is why they did all that running. Well, at least in August in Richmond, they didn't look like they weren't ready for it. They dragged off that field that day. They were clearly affected by the humidity, which was much different than what we had been practicing in here. And then I think they were affected on Sunday. They looked like they would drag ass on
As
Sunday
is to
in,
be
the,
expected.
In the fourth quarter.
They're human beings. They have physiology. You know,
so
that's how it
why
works.
Aren't the Miami players as affected?
Because they train in it all the time.
But we've had hot days this summer.
They had training. Every day hot. Did you hear Brandon LaFell talking about what a breeze camp was? He grew up in LSU and he went to the Panthers went to South Carolina.
So that's what
this was a dream camp.
So from a physiology standpoint,
they weren't as ready. They hadn't experienced it.
Yeah.
On a regular basis. They got a taste in Richmond. But on a regular day after day basis, whereas Miami has been down there for 6 weeks.
So we have to get a rule then that you're not allowed to play a game in Miami early in the season. We need that rule instituted.
And you're also not allowed to play in New England late in the season because that wouldn't be fair to them.
Right.
Because you know when they come back here, they have no shot.
We'll split
right?
the difference. Right. We always have to play Miami in early November.
Let's spin this around.
Back-to-back weeks.
Right. Okay? when Miami comes back up here, it's December, right?
Right.
Yeah. They got no shot.
Right.
You might as well put that one in ink. You don't have to pencil that one in. They got no shot.
Yeah. When was the last time the Patriots lost two in a row to a division opponent?
I don't know.
Paul, you usually give me these things.
Let's go to John in North Carolina. Hey, John.
I'm better with the positive ones because there's more of those.
Yeah, you guys don't.
Better than the team.
And better than you, evidently.
And I felt so bad since Sunday. I feel like I've been stuck in an elevator with Ray Rice.
Too soon?
That's terrible.
but the offensive line, I think Belichick said the offensive line's problems were physical. I think that's the term he used, which is even more damning.
It is, because, you know...
Like you said, it wasn't communication.
Right, if you're just not good enough, there's nothing you can do.
And then on the defensive line, I mean, let's not sugarcoat this.
Same thing.
The defensive line got pushed around.
Yep.
And the Dolphins didn't have their best offensive lineman in Mike Pouncey.
Yeah. Miami was missing a lot of players the other day.
And before we say Mike Wallace is a great receiver.
He's not.
I looked up his stats. 2012, 2013, he averaged 50 yards a game. I mean, we're not talking Calvin Johnson. We're not talking the guy on Dallas. You know, we're talking 50 yards a game. We're talking less than Julian Edelman for the last 2 years.
Yeah. So.
I mean, just something to think about. And there's something I saw that I've never seen before on the Patriots. And that's Jamie Collins. You know, you guys pointed out in the post-game show that it was bad. It was bad to have it like that. But Jamie Collins was covering Wallace on some crossing patterns or at least why he went through the middle. And Wallace went through, caught a pass, and it was a 23-20 at that time, and Collins starts walking. He's just walking, and Wallace is 8 yards from him, juking, and cuts back to the middle, and you see Collins just standing there on the field. You know, I mean, I don't remember another Patriots game where I've seen that.
They were gassed. There's no doubt. I mean, and they didn't have their heads about them at the end of that game.
And we've talked a
little
bit
about
depth.
It's not just a physical thing. When you're like that, your mental facilities start breaking down as well.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about depth, too. And I think that's going to be an issue on some of those positions. And linebacker's the one that we've all talked about. I don't think they have a whole lot of depth there.
Yep. Thanks for the call, John.
Quick note, 08-09. Patriots lost to the Jets late in 08 and then in September of 09. So 08-09 last time they lost. Other than that, if you look for the Dolphins or the Bills, it was a while.
34-31 in overtime in 08.
He's right. Now, what do you got?
16-9 early in 09.
Yeah. He's such a loser. Yeah. He's right. He got it.
He's the Rain Man. Eldridge is in North Carolina. Hey, Eldridge.
That and $2 will get me a cup
of
coffee.
Hey, how y'all doing?
Not these days. You need at least three. Hey, what's up?
How y'all doing?
Great.
Man, I'm feeling like somebody just kicked me in the butt three times. With three.
So does Fred.
So does Fred.
We haven't addressed that yet.
That's the worst game I ever seen them play.
Honestly. No, it isn't.
It is to me.
No, it isn't. They were up 20-10 in the first half. Remember that Cleveland game a couple years ago?
Right.
They couldn't suck a bleeping bleep that day.
Yeah, Peyton Hillis ran all over them.
Yeah, that the Cleveland
I mean, we've
game
had
was
bad
worse.
Games. This game, they led 20-10
right.
at halftime, and then the crap fell out in the second
right.
half.
You were feeling pretty good. I mean, you knew you weren't playing that well, but yet you had a 10-point lead.
Right. In the old days, Fred, Paul would have nodded.
Right.
But we should have won that one anyway.
I actually did not.
And I was thinking about it.
When they went up 10, I said, that ends the competitive portion of this game.
Well, and I was thinking about it, you know, because with all the hype that we've given the defense, you're up 10 points, 20-10. You're like, okay, if this is the defense we
go
hope it's going to be, this game's over because this is what they did in 03.
See, my feelings were more about the offense. I saw the 80-yard drive and the 94-yard drive, and I didn't think Miami was going to have any answers for it.
And they never scored again.
Yeah, but we never did. But Fred... If you're stealing for LaFell to be a difference maker, I'm telling you again, keep dreaming.
Well, keep dreaming. I think if he's not, they're in big trouble.
Keep dreaming.
Paul's prediction is he doesn't make it through the season.
If he's not contributing, then the Patriots
exactly
are in trouble.
I predict that. I said there's a possibility.
I mean, then you have to hope that Dobson comes off the bench and he does it because one of these guys have to do it.
Tell that Jimmy Wilson guy that he was a non-factor in the game.
Dobson, Brian Tim, one of them.
Well, and we're not going to see him for a while. So if LaFell isn't going to do it, then Dobson better play next game and he's got to contribute. They can't keep going to just Gronkowski and Edelman.
Dobson.
Well, can't happen.
Dobson's
don't leave Amendola off the hook here. He's a $30 million receiver.
You know, you're right. You're right.
I know it's not his fault, but he should be included in. He's got to do something. How about earning your paycheck? Even though, again, I know you didn't give yourself your paycheck.
My thing about Amendola is it him or Brady just saying, I'm not throwing it to him?
Might be some of that. Because, and by the way, did you notice last week Brady actually acknowledged that?
Yeah.
Where he said.
Well, he didn't mention him by name.
No. He said, if I don't have faith in, I'm not going to look to your side of the field.
Right.
And that was the first time I can ever remember him saying, because it used to always be, the open receiver is my favorite receiver.
Yeah.
Now he's admitting, if the open receiver's a guy I don't trust, then he's not my favorite receiver.
When he does throw it to Amendola, we talked about that, LaFell bad penalty. That was a great catch by Amendola on that play for like 17 yards along the sideline.
Yeah, it was a pick. I mean, the reason why that happened is because of what LaFell did.
Yeah, but he can do that. I mean,
but what I'm saying is when the ball's thrown to Amendola, he doesn't look terrible.
Well, that's what I don't understand. And I'm including, practice field. I don't understand why Brady would have this dismissal of Amendola. I really don't. Unless it's personal and I can't see it.
I don't understand.
But even that, I see them interacting.
Only because I don't see him having the options. Like, he can't possibly saying, I got Edelman. I don't need anybody else.
Right.
That's what I don't get. But what I've seen from Amendola hasn't really impressed me over all
not
that
not better
much.
Than any of the others?
Yes, better than the others, but it hasn't been
over.
So
why haven't they been blackballed?
Yards a catch.
Why haven't they been blackballed if he's been blackballed? We started hearing about this last winter from Ben Volen that, you know, Brady had no trust in him. He didn't want to throw to him. How is he more confident in the other guys that I see fall down and drop passes?
I just think that he feels.
Wait for the
no, listen, and this might be too simplistic, but to me, there's too much of a redundancy between him and Edelman, and Edelman's the guy that he throws to in those spots. Whereas, Tompkins and LaFell are on, they're different kinds of guys.
Yeah.
Thanks for
but
the call, Aldridge.
They're not valuable in any way.
They're not as good. But, Amendola was targeted 5 times, LaFell 6. And Tompkins 10.
Let's go to Andrew in Buffalo. Hey,
I don't understand why that's the breakdown, but to me, I'm wondering if he just feels more comfortable with Edelman than Amendola.
Well, he does, obviously.
So, but that might be the simplistic answer to it, is that they're doing the same stuff. They provide the same things, and there's some you know, redundancy to it.
Well, there is, just because of their natural build and skill set.
Well,
but
then isn't that the fault of Josh McDaniels? I mean, if they're doing the same,
Bill Belichick, the guy, $31 million.
What?
What are you blaming McDaniels for giving him $31 million?
Use Amendola. We were told that Amendola can also stretch the field.
Told that, or did we come up with that?
Well, that's what we were told.
These are the things that we like to talk ourselves into.
You know, so use them a little differently.
I just think we're the kings of, you know, we've found different ways over different years to use different personnel. If Amendola is the second best receiver on the team,
right,
regardless of any redundancy,
I agree,
find a way to use him and put his skills to work.
Andrew, what do you got?
Hey, can y'all hear me?
Yeah. Yes, gotcha.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't give my prediction last week to John Rook, but I had the Patriots actually losing this game just because where the placement was on the schedule. You know, first week of the season, you know, in Miami is hot, you know, and that's the team that always seemed to give us trouble down there. So I had them lose.
You're not alone. Brian Morey, executive director of the Hall of Patriot Place, presented by Raytheon, also had them losing.
And he had enough time.
Presented by Raytheon.
He had enough time in his day, even though the hall was open at the time,
right,
to give us that prediction. So that's true. Fred's right.
No, it isn't. I mean, Brewski, we talked about it. Brewski said on EEI that when the schedule came out, one of the first things they did was look to see when they played in Miami, and was it in September, because that was a hard game. They would hate it. Then they looked to see, could it be a night game, because that would even help us. He admitted that was a major thing.
If it was a 30-minute game, we would have won.
Right. Sorry, and
the way I look at it.
Before I called, I called y'all like maybe a couple weeks ago and told y'all, you know, what I think is the three things you need to win a Super Bowl, which is a great defense, a really good or to great offensive line, and a really good running game. And I don't think we have three of those right now. And you know, I was saying like I don't believe in the defensive line until I see it. You know, I believe it was Fred who was like, you know, if Kelly is back and Wolfork and John Jones is coming on strong, you don't think those guys get pressure? And I said, I don't believe it until I see it. Well, they got really rid of Kelly, and Wolfork is not really your typical pass rusher. Chandler Jones, I don't think he's going to make that big leap we all want him to make. I feel like the defensive line is still an issue.
What is our defensive line?
Vince Wilfork and some other guys.
Right. I mean, really, do we?
They should be in the 4-3.
If you had a gun to your head and said, okay, name the Patriots defensive line, could you do it?
Well, that was my point last week. These were one of the many questions we couldn't answer. And now I continue to say, what is the 3-4?
What is the fascination with the 3-4 defense?
Heading into the game, that was one of the things that Andy and I talked a lot about. Can you ever remember a Patriots team having this many question marks among the starting lineup? And I know that they knew who the starters were going to be. Wasn't painfully obvious to anybody watching.
They don't know who the starters are, and we saw that with all the rotate. They don't know who the safety is.
No, but
they don't know who the defensive ends are.
Me.
They don't know who the offensive linemen are at all.
You misunderstood me. I know that Bill knew what he was going to do heading into the game.
No, they knew who was going to start in Miami.
Right.
They don't know who their starters are.
Right. And
there's a difference.
That's my point is that, you know, we just watched them for 6 weeks every day. Those of us that did that for 6 weeks every day had no real idea who was going to be in the defensive line with Vince, two spots or three. Okay. They didn't know who was going to be the starting safety next to McCourty. They didn't know who was going to start at the opposite corner from Revis. They didn't know who was going to start at center. Or one of the guards. I think we all assumed that Conley would be starting somewhere.
Correct.
Okay, so two starting spots on the offensive line, we didn't know. And then that doesn't even take into consideration the injured guys who missed all of the preseason, like Gronk. What were you going to get out of Gronk? You couldn't have known that for sure going into the game. Easily didn't know for sure going into the game.
And do we think, you know, I said this upstairs, Paul and I were discussing this whole 3-4 thing. It just doesn't seem like they're suited for the 3-4. Is it possible that they think once Easley and Chris Jones are healthy, that they then have the personnel for the 3-4? Because I'm not sure I agree with that.
I don't.
If Chris Jones is now some answer?
Well, certainly not for a, you know, two-gap technique 3-4, right?
Yeah, no. They have all these undersized guys, these 290 guys that are 6'2", instead of, I've said it a million times, it used to be the prototype. Remember even somebody was talking,
Seymour,
but then not only that, when the Chiefs drafted somebody out of LSU, it was, you know, now he's got their Richard Seymour. That's the prototype in the 3-4 when you draft a defensive end. We don't have those guys. We had one, Tommy Kelly. He asked to be released because you weren't using him right, and he got released. But I don't really understand what the 3-4 plan is here.
I don't either. I don't either, honestly. And I'm not saying that They don't. I just don't see what they're doing. I have no idea. You know, maybe a lot of what they're doing is in the anticipation of when Easley gets up to speed, and then we'll see it sort of come into focus. But right now, I don't see what they're doing.
But even him, he's an undersized athletic penetrator.
Well,
are we doing it totally differently now? Have they scrapped the old 3-4?
Yeah.
But I still say the ways you can use Chandler Jones, there's 4-3 end, 3-4 outside linebacker, and 3-4 end. They picked the worst of the three options. 3-4
end. 3-4 end is not what
Just waste our first round pick, who's our best pass rusher?
Yeah.
Even though he had a couple hits, but, you know, they got 15 yards for the other team.
Right. Taking my call.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, Andrew. I'm with Andrew, too. I mean, I know he didn't get a chance to talk much, but that's what he was he doesn't think they're fit. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about on the TV show later. I don't think that they have the personnel to play the way they tried to play on Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, Fred,
again,
I'm not sure what they were trying to do.
In a 3-4, I don't think they have the personnel.
I think
for
they
that.
Were trying to stop the Dolphins, and it didn't work.
And I've said this a lot to you.
Did you read my edit letter? No, I wrote that without talking to you guys. So, just so you know.
So that means it could have.
It's what we're talking about right now.
Now, Fred, I'm going to urge people. I hope it's up now. But Take Tuesday, I sent it to the guys to post and put the photos in. My Take Tuesday. All that being said, with 3 minutes and 36 seconds to go, Vince Wilfork had a open field tackle on Knowshon Moreno that if he makes 4 yards deep in the backfield, the Dolphins kick a field goal, you're only down 26-20, and we've seen this story before.
Right.
Last year
we saw it. Tom Brady could suck as much as anyone for, you know, 2 of 16 and all these things. If he puts together about 7 plays, they score a touchdown and they win 27-26, and all of this is, well, you got by and you got some things to clean up, but you won. So they were as bad as they played. And Wilfork made a great play. He beat his blocker. He was in the right defensive end spot.
But like
he had
said,
his outside arm.
It was 6 yards downfield, right?
No, in the backfield.
No, this
it was third and goal from the four. Okay, yeah. Third and goal from the four. He met Knowshon Moreno at the handoff at about the 8 yard line. He had his outside arm free, and Moreno just put a nice athletic move where he sort of laterally slid and then burst forward through the rest of them for a touchdown.
And then he ran right over Jamie Collins.
But if he makes that tackle, the whole game could have looked different. You may have escaped. You might have been like, "Woo! Good thing Brady got hot on that last drive because, you know, we sucked all day, but we still got the win."
By the way,
close they were.
Moreno was feeling it, huh? I mean, no one was bringing him down one-on-one. He was...
Well, because we couldn't tackle him.
We didn't really have him a lot. I mean, a lot of those... It was alarming to me how often both he and Miller got 5 yards before anybody hit him.
Well, Gerard Mayo had a Gerard Mayo day. What do you have, 12 tackles, game high?
I didn't see the tackle stuff, but...
Because you know where those came?
You know...
At a place called Downfield.
Mayo had 12 tackles.
$50 million.
He had a sack.
He did. And then, you know what's funny about that? Predicted.
It was a delayed sack.
It was predicted by us.
We predicted it. We expected them to bring some inside pressures. That's what you get when you listen to the Dunkin' Donuts Patriots pregame social before the game. You get the game how it's going to play out.
Unfortunately, we didn't predict them to have one sack against that pathetic excuse of an offensive line, and they only had one sack.
Chris with a T-I-A-N.
Can I take shots at an offensive line that ran the ball for 200 yards and protected their passer all day?
Sure. Christian.
Hey, guys.
This is where you talk.
Well, you know, normally when they lose a game, I go to, like, other teams' websites in the AFC and, you know, just revel and they lost. But everybody won, so I couldn't do that.
Looking up.
You know, I mean, you know, first half they looked good. Paul, I'm assuming you gave the nod when they went up 17-7 after that 11-play drive.
I did.
Yeah, I figured up. This is the Perillo nod, and we're good, and then...
I might have given it after the third straight turnover. You know, like, Miami just looked so like Miami.
It is.
I mean, that's the other part of it. When have you ever seen the Patriots thoroughly lose a game that they, you know, had all the turnover at? You know, usually when the Patriots lose a game, it's because they came out and turned it over 3 or 4 times and the other team played a near-perfect game.
Yeah.
Miami couldn't even hold the ball in the first half. It was unbelievable.
3 turnovers or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what made it even more just odder. Yeah. You know, Paul, this is sort of special history, but I kind of... This sort of brings it back to a game. It was one of the two games that I've been to in my life at Gillette when in 05 when they lost to the Chargers 41-17. And if you remember that game, the game of Mighty Schottenheimer came out and said, you know, they got like 8 new starters over there, and Brady got chirpy and said, Ronnie, mind his own business, work for his own team.
Yeah,
you know?
I remember it well.
And I just remember, you know, Monty Beisel whiffing on tackles and stuff like that. And that's sort of what the second half of me looked like. And I just can't remember them getting outmanned like that. for the longest time and getting pushed around. Yeah. And that's the thing that kind of scares me. Like, you know, for Belichick to say, you know, and for other people to say that I've read this, really not a, you know, it wasn't a scheme thing. You know, it was just a man thing. It was a technique thing. Well, that just leads back, when you talk about technique, to me, it also just leads about, it's a talent thing. Like, they rushed four against five, and they got to Brady all day. Like, did they blitz even three or four times during the game?
Right.
Miami, so that's the scary thing. So, you know, the first half, yeah, it was great. I just, you know, did the heat get to them? I hate using that as an excuse. I do.
I know, but you know? It is. It's not an excuse, but I think it was a fact. But, you know, shame on them for not being ready, you know?
Yeah.
I mean.
And for a team that, you know,
yep.
is always prepared and, you know, Belichick, you know, arrives a day early and they do all this stuff right. To me, that was just surprising. But I will kind of caution this week. Going to Minnesota, this isn't exactly a layup game. It's on
no.
the road.
No, it should be.
And Minnesota, it should be, but Minnesota got a good defense. And, you know, they got a good defensive line. Did you see the stats, you know, that they had against St. Louis? I mean, I know it was obviously a backup quarterback, but, you know, they look pretty good. You know Castle, but Castle knows you. I don't know. You know, it's, to me, it's not a, it's a toss-up game. And to start the season 0-2, to me, is like, mind-blowing.
It would be, but, you know. But it won't happen, because I don't think this is a toss-up game. I really don't. And,
no.
you know, they have one thing you stop. You stop Adrian Peterson, and I know you didn't stop it this week, but I'm guessing you're going to be better. I'm guessing you're going to clean it up.
Right.
And it was actually, I believe, a third string. I believe the backup got hurt, and the third string guy had to come in for St. Louis. I also found something funny. They had some issues with the headsets in that game for Matt Castle, and I was reading some of Mike Zimmer's quotes, and apparently they don't use hand signals, and they weren't ready. Castle just was calling plays all on. He's like, it's a good thing Matt knew the game plan, and he knew what we wanted to do out there, so he just kept calling the plays. And I was like, don't we practice hand signals sometimes in case of that situation, so that you can still have some input? And then Josh McDaniels just said the Vikings defense is one of those defenses. They don't trick you. They're not going to trick you. They're just going to do what they do. You might turn your mic
in on. A way, it's kind of good to be facing Adrian Peterson after a game where you couldn't stop the run,
right.
because – Now, you know, Matt Castle's a good quarterback, but you're not really worried about them throwing the ball all over the place, but you are worried about getting gashed the way you did the week before. So you can focus on Peterson, see if you can improve.
And Patterson.
Patterson.
Who had 100 yards rushing last week on
OD,
four carries.
AD. But, you know, and see if you can improve. And, you know, see
Wait,
if you
does
can.
He think I was
He's
changing.
Talking about two different guys.
There's
Peterson
a Peterson
and Patterson.
And a Patterson.
Oh, you're talking about the cornerback?
No, the wide receiver who had 100 yards
Cordero
rushing.
Cordero Patterson
week.
Had 100 yards rushing.
Oh, rushing?
Yes.
Really?
Jesus.
Oh, okay.
Play the circus music,
and they do,
for God's sake.
And they
I'm
do
still
try.
Also worried about Adrian Peterson.
You should be, but
no,
I'm just saying.
Adrian Peterson is, and I agree with your point 100%. Andy and I talked about it, actually, I think before the game was even over. This is generally, they don't let that happen. When you have a team that's one-dimensional, they generally will take that away. Miami, right. I don't think that Tannehill played a very good game, but they can run and throw. You know, they wanted to mix it up. And I think the read option stuff was a little different for them. That's something that Lazor brought over from Philadelphia. That's not how they played last year. So they probably weren't as prepared for that running style as maybe they might have been in other times. Peterson, I think, he's coming at you. I mean, he's great.
Or Patterson.
I don't know about what Patterson's going to do, but Peterson, I'm going to be stunned.
Fred is still a little confused.
I'm going to be stunned and really, really concerned a week from now. If we're talking about Adrian Peterson ran for 150-plus right. yards, and they controlled the game and controlled the clock with Adrian Peterson running, because that's Andy's thing.
Who has a better chance for 100 yards this week, Peterson or Patterson?
Peterson.
Okay.
But that's
I think it's Patterson.
That's your thing about, you know, you can scheme all you want and just, you know, devote everybody to stop the run, but that's not how you can't do that.
Aside from the 3-4-4-3 thing, it worries me a little bit that he's, you know, basically we got pushed around. Because that's concerning, because, you know, I can't play any tricks and scheme and do all this
that's
to stop
my point.
That.
And you can
I
just
got guys getting pushed around.
You can add guys to the box and say, I'm not letting them run,
right.
but that's not any way to play defense.
And now Patterson, not Peterson, might have a bomb down the field because all of a sudden you're devoting these resources in the box.
All right.
Don't they have a good tight end?
Kevin, it's
Rudolph.
It's time to eat for a little bit halfway through the show. We got a lot of emails coming in, a lot of calls. Everyone wants to get involved here, and we'll do that right after this.
We're NRG, and we're a new kind of energy company, one that's hard at work making the most of renewable sources of energy, One whose solar energy is helping power football stadiums across the country. One that's developing new technologies that can one day turn your home into its own source of power and put you in charge of how you use it. We're putting that power into your hands. NRG, the power to change life.
Before Jenny met her new nephew, Wyatt, before she drove to New York, and before she picked up a Boston Red Sox onesie down the street from her Alston studio, Jenny got 1% back on tires, 2% back on snacks, and 3% back on gas using her Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. So Jenny got ready to do what she loved with cash rewards she liked. That's the power of the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card. That's Bank of America. Life's better when we're connected. With the Bank AmeriCard Cash Rewards credit card, you can earn 1% cash back on all purchases all the time. 2% cash back on groceries and 3% cash back on gas. Apply today at bankofamerica.com/getcashback. Grocery and gas bonus rewards apply to 1,500 in combined purchases each quarter. Call 1-888-224-8735 for details about credit costs and terms. Copyright 2013 Bank of America Corporation.
Ask the rest of the country what comes to mind when they think of New England. The answer isn't Paul Revere or Tri-Corner Hats, maple syrup or Walden Woods. They now think of dominance. The success of the sleeveless hoodie. Three Super Bowl championships, AFC East champions 10 out of the past 12 years, the first NFL dynasty of the millennium. So while the other 44 states now think of us more for our wins than clam chowder, that's fine. Just ask anybody here. The Pats are all we think about, too. Gillette is proud to have played a role in the ascent of the New England Patriots, our New England Patriots. Because the logo hanging high above Gillette Stadium isn't just team sponsorship. It's our declaration of allegiance to the fans from Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, Massachusetts, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. The New Englanders that have helped make Gillette what we are today. From Boston for New England, we're Gillette, the best a man can get.
The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop has everything you need to show your pride on game day and every day. Choose from the widest selection of hats, tees, authentic jerseys, and much more, including Pro Shop exclusives and sideline gear from Adidas, Nike, and New Era. The Pro Shop is located next to Gillette Stadium and is open Monday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Sunday, 10 a.m. to 7 p.m., or shop online 24/7 at PatriotsProShop.com. The Patriots and Revolution Pro Shop, your team, your store.
NFL Mobile from Verizon is perfect for a guy like me. At home or on the go, NFL Mobile keeps me connected to all the action across the league. I can watch live NFL games on Thursday, Sunday, and Monday nights. Track player and team news, player tweets, watch NFL Network 24/7 and more. Plus, with NFL Mobile, I have real-time access to NFL Red Zone, so I can watch every touchdown from every game on Sunday afternoons. So I'll never be without football. Especially when Jaws and Muffin can't find that oh-so-perfect spot. Oh, hold up. Go, go. That's it. Come on, kick it into hyperdrive. Touchdown!
Get NFL Mobile on America's largest 4G LTE network and discover why more people choose Verizon than any other network. Call *NFL to download NFL Mobile now. Verizon, official wireless provider of the New England Patriots. Airtime message and data usage applies. Available on select smartphones. Coverage not available everywhere. Don't call or text while driving.
Follow the Patriots like never before with the official Patriots mobile apps for iPhone, Android, and iPad. Get instant access to all the latest news, stats, and analysis, plus live Patriots Game Center. Search New England Patriots in your device's app marketplace to get the latest Patriots news, audio, and video in the palm of your hand. Download the official Patriots mobile apps today and stay connected.
Xbox One is not only a game console, but the home entertainment system every fantasy football fan needs. The NFL on Xbox One is your connection to all things fantasy, giving you personalized news, highlights, stats, and scores instantly on your TV. Watching your favorite team play on Sunday, but wondering how your fantasy players are doing? With built-in fantasy football, track your updates on TV in real time across NFL.com and multiple fantasy leagues, all while still watching live games. Xbox One, bringing fantasy football to life. Now available for $3.99 at a Microsoft store near you. Y'all know PFW in Progress attracts, well, an eclectic audience.
Dave is in Hi. Connecticut. Hey, Dave.
Our fan base is excellent on evaluating talent.
I'm just sitting there and listening about the Ed Reed thing. I think, if he passes through waivers, the Pats should, kick the tires. I think, he'd be a good insurance policy, for Gregory.
Understanding when players are, shall we say, past their prime.
Here's a name that, I don't know what his contract situation is, but, what about Sean Taylor? I don't even know where he ended up.
Yeah, Sean Taylor is the
guy dead. Sean Taylor died.
Sean Taylor died. Whoops.
Yeah.
And embracing cultural diversity.
When is Gronkowski going to grow up a little bit here? I was reading, he put his foot in his mouth again, made some comments about some Oriental guy.
Whoa.
Asian.
Speaking of putting your foot in your mouth, you can't call them Orientals.
Think you can be the next great caller in the PFW in Progress family? Give it a shot by dialing 855-PATS-500. Just try to have something intelligent to bring to the table.
Okay, there you go.
I knew what you meant. You want to start this call over? Give us a call back in 5 minutes.
Dave, I'm with you. I speak, Dave.
All right. Back here in PFW in Progress. We're all trying to figure out what happened on Sunday and what they can do to fix it. excuse me. Wow. I didn't get to finish my sandwich.
And half of it's on your chest.
It's just crumbs.
You need to let people know what happened to you in Miami. It was a tough weekend all the way around.
Well, I played tennis. And
it was dominant.
I went one way and my knee didn't, and now I have a sprained knee.
And you have an immobilizer and crutches you're supposed to be using, but you're just limping around.
Right.
Okay. But we
the immobilizer keeps sliding down. It's annoying.
Tighten it.
I try. I do it as tight as I can. Any more, I'm going to lose my leg from lack of circulation.
That fat thighs are just squeezing
it
off.
Just keep sliding down my leg. So. I'm not using that. The crutches, I can't use.
I know. I heard you throw them earlier when you were walking somewhere. But we should let people know you also had to stand up and you were making all these faces like you were in severe pain. So he'd gotten it out.
Uncomfortable. Uncomfortable is the word.
Are you on anything?
Just some Aleve. Ibuprofen.
And when I ask that, I mean for the last 10 years inclusive.
All right. Web radio at patriots.com, 508-298-0398 is the ace ticket hotline. Let's read some emails because there's a lot of them and they kind of get short shrift when the phones stack up.
Yes, and people weren't happy in the post game show that we took too many calls and not enough emails.
Well, that's because Bertrand comes from that, the traditional radio background. They don't understand what emails
that's
are.
Probably
right.
A good point.
You're right.
Yeah. Cattell writes in, hello, I'm Cattell. From St. Louis, I think Hooman penalty in the third quarter lost the game. Dolphins were just up 3 points in the third quarter, and Ridley had a big gain around the midfield, and Hooman had the holding penalty. On second down, we had a sack. Maybe if it wasn't a penalty, Patriots offense would have gotten in rhythm, and the result would have been different. Finally, trade Will Fork and bring back Mankins. Well, maybe if Hooman hadn't held.
He would have had a tackle.
Do you remember that play?
Yeah.
You saw the hold, right?
I didn't see the hole, but I saw the Ridley nice run, and I was excited.
And it was because,
Of the hole.
Yeah.
The guy who was responsible for making the tackle and probably would have made the tackle, given Ridley's lack of big runs,
I mean, at the very
was
least,
tackled.
At the very least, if Ridley is able to make that guy miss, he's going to have to break a tackle and probably gets 5 yards and not 20.
Right.
Which, that was a good run, but, the guy that was supposed to be there got as blatantly held as you could happen.
Jeff from Pennsylvania, Darrell Revis is an asset to any team, but I've always felt the guy was pretty quiet and not that aggressive. He's now the face of the defense, and the defense looked quiet and not aggressive. One of the things I loved about Tlaib was that he attacked. Last year, before everyone got injured, our defense was ugly and mean. Is this an issue now, that the defense's identity is so passive? It feels passive. Are we missing that aggressive presence on the defense?
Yes.
One of the big reasons Seattle is so successful is they're intimidating out of the gate. Revis seems like a loner, a mercenary, a missing the spark of an aggressive face to the defense.
It's a great email.
You want to expand on that?
I kind of agree with it. I mean, we can't praise Aqib Tlaib for the swagger and energy and style he brought to the defense and then think it's not going to be missed on any level when you replace him with a guy who admittedly is better but doesn't have the same personality, might not have the same effect in terms of how he kind of deals with other people and the energy. I guess energy would be the word.
I agree with everything you said about Revis and Tlaib. I think Revis is quiet. I think he called him a mercenary. I would agree.
He's here for now.
And I think Tlaib was that sort of infectious personality and all that stuff. But what I saw all summer long was not a quiet, passive defense. I saw an extremely enthusiastic group on the practice field.
They need Browner.
One that was hooting and hollering the whole time. I think that was basically by the linebackers. It was Hightower and Mayo, I thought, were really the ringleaders of that stuff that we saw here at Gillette Stadium.
Maybe it was Tommy Kelly.
I don't think you're going to get that out of Revis. I don't think that's his personality. He's not one of these. He's not Richard Sherman. He's not going to make a play and then let every 68,000 people. I'm going to let every one of you know that it was me that made that play. That's not Revis. But I don't think that means because of that you've lost any personality on defense. They played terrible on Sunday.
Yeah, I think they were just gassed in the second half.
What was there to be excited and chest pounding about what they did? They got the ball thrown right down their throat.
Jamie Collins.
They could not stop the run all day.
Jamie Collins' hit was a chest pounding hit.
And they did. By the way, I would say that was a
textbook forced fumble. Lay a guy.
I would also say, and I'm often, we talk about turnovers, and we often are dismissive of that. Well, those were turnovers that you forced.
Mm-hmm.
A great hit by Collins. Great hit by Logan Ryan. Now,
the shoe. Did you see the shoe?
Now,
oh, my God.
I've never seen
a shoe fly that far.
Right.
I don't know how it happened, and it's a problem with how loose his shoes must have been.
That thing went about like 50 feet in the air.
Unbelievable.
But I also want to say...
Paul doesn't want to talk about such. Let's get back to football.
No, I just said it was a great hit. I agree with you.
The shoe. How does a shoe go that far?
I know, but it happened. What are you going to do?
He didn't really care. He wants to talk about the football.
No, but you brought it up.
You're talking about a stupid thing. Okay, let's move on. Talk football.
But you're
going to BS all day. Talk football.
In terms of sort of, I think you fool yourself into, oh, well, the defense played great. Well, they didn't. That was like the Logan Ryan hit was on like a 17-yard run.
Sure.
The interception.
Bend but don't break.
The interception in the red zone was a terribly underthrown pass to a guy who was open for a touchdown. The one that Dennard made a nice play on the ball to pick it off. In the past, that might have gone off someone's hands and fallen
incomplete.
Welker
wouldn't have caught
it. Now, that's a cheap shot. But I do say that I think that the defense didn't struggle because they weren't out there with any passion. The defense got the ball just run right down their throat, and they couldn't stop it.
And the least of my concerns with Darrell Revis are his energy. I think he's a very feisty guy. My only concern is he as good as his reputation that precedes him?
Noah writes in, let me ask you how much you feel about the lack of playing time with Brady in the preseason in order to take a longer look at Garoppolo and Mallett, if it had anything to do with his poor performance. Let's face it, the whole team was awful. Don't you feel Tom keyed on certain players too often? I think he was with Giselle in New York when she was on The Tonight Show and had no calf injury. What? Let's hope they recover like they
did
last year in Buffalo. If not, we're in real trouble. Watch Tom with his brain stuff. Look what Tiger did with his golf game. Talk about fundamentals. If it's not broke, don't fix it. I don't even know what that means.
Well, reinventing the swing kind of thing.
Yeah.
But that, I get what he's saying, but that's a tricky thing. Like, you might think it wasn't broke.
Right.
But he might look at it totally differently. He thinks he had his worst completion percentage in years last year.
There is something weird. Like, over the years, like, and again, I'm going to sound really foolish here because I don't know what I'm talking about. But the way his wrist is cocked when he throws the ball, it almost seems like he puts his hand over the ball when he's throwing instead of to the side. And it's really weird when it comes off his hand. I can't explain it, but it's because the hand is over the ball, it looks so different than most quarterbacks when they throw it.
I haven't noticed it.
And especially on the sideline patterns.
Yeah, but my only point is, it's easy for us to sit there and say it wasn't broken, but I think that Tom probably looks at it and says, I'm coming off statistically the worst season I've had in 10 years. My completion percentage was as low as it's been in 10 years. So he might think something was broken mechanically.
Right.
And that's why now some of the deep balls, I think he was what he talked about specifically.
Well, he didn't fix
I didn't say he did fix them,
but
he might think it was broken. Now Tiger Woods, I think that's a little different. Tiger Woods would have been like the Tiger Slam where he won four majors in a row and he's firing his swing coach and inventing a whole new swing. Obviously that wasn't broken. He was at the height of his game twice and rebuilt the whole game, forgetting about his personal stuff.
Right.
you know, that
his swing wasn't broke off the field.
If you ask me, that's that was the downfall of his career, is the end of that personal stuff.
But I mean, I think it's a reasonable argument to say to Tiger Woods, why were you redoing your whole swing when you were the best in the game?
And we can't have it both ways as fans. We always praise people. You know, he's in year 12 and he's still trying to find new ways to get better. And now you criticize him for trying. And I actually haven't noticed the throwing thing, because I was going to say, I don't see a lot of dramatic changes with him. And he always talks about it's little things.
Well,
it's
don't
fine-tuning,
you talk about that
stride
thing with the arm or something?
He told me that wasn't true.
No?
No, he just had a towel under his arm to keep it close.
No, the towel is real, yeah. But the whole remember we saw him follow through and really emphasize the left arm? He said it didn't exist. I was seeing things.
Well, okay.
Really?
Yeah.
When did you talk to him about that?
I do my job, Paul. I talk to Brady a lot.
For God's sakes. You have to really try.
But check out his wrist. Check out the...
Is it limp?
No, it's curled over the ball, almost like he's throwing a curveball.
Oh, and he is going to a baseball pitching coach now. But... I did want to say, I've actually been watching mechanics of other quarterbacks, and they always say Brady is, like, close to perfect in terms of it really is true. When you watch other people, there are some guys that just bail out with their foot. They don't step at their throw. Colin Kaepernick is an absolute fundamental mess.
Oh, he's playing in the backyard.
He's such an athlete.
And
he gets away with
it. And for how long, though? And then, you know, Eli Manning, every time I see him making throws, he's off balance, he's stepping, he's off.
Brady
really does have a pretty
throw. He had a great game, but he's all over the place.
Well, Stafford has terrible mechanics.
The reason he gets away with it is because he's got a bleeping cannon.
Right.
Right.
And
but that's one of those things. You ask the questions, but you ask the question, you know, how long will Kaepernick? And then people will say, see, you can't be one of those running quarterbacks and it's going to catch up to you. That's not going to be why he's not going to have longevity necessarily. That'll help because he's going to take hits but mechanically, he's a mess. I agree with you.
Right.
And I think that's going to catch up to him.
And when he loses a little arm strength, all of a sudden, he's in year 10 and he's trying to learn better mechanics
and
it's too late.
And right as I say it, they're showing it on ESPN. The throw that Stafford made last night, it was the cardinal sin throw. He's rolling one way and throwing the other way.
I'll tell you, Brady
didn't
make that throw.
He gets away with it because he has such a good arm. It was perfect. It was a perfect throw.
But Brady can't, literally, I don't think Tom Brady can make that throw.
No. I don't think so either.
So, you know, he never got into the habit. It's just not on his radar.
Chad in Atlanta, Gronk played very hesitant on Sunday. He looked unsure about getting hit.
I agree.
That's why he didn't look good. It was like he was afraid to make a big play in fear of getting hurt again. Plus,
that's another one to put on the concern meter because I don't think that goes away.
The O-line scares me. I want Fred to tell me that they are going to fix the issue and everything will be okay. But I know Andy is going to say, how are you going to fix it? With what pieces can you fix it? The D line seems to be in the same boat. We are missing key pieces.
Yep.
What's that?
We're missing key pieces, like Tommy Kelly and Logan Mankins.
Oh, I thought like as in
Fred.
The
bigger
guys
loss,
that are out.
Logan Mankins or Tommy Kelly? If you had to answer it right now, based on needs, replacements.
Tommy Kelly.
Me too.
Tommy Kelly.
I mean, that's a guy that's built like we talk about the prototypical 3-4 end. And you hear, you know, the quotes, you know, I know I can stop the run. I certainly can still get after the quarterback and all that. At least you have guards you can plug in there.
Yeah.
Marcus
not
Cannon's
well.
Okay.
He was terrible the other day, and I think that they miss Mankins a lot.
They miss him.
And I think they would have had a typical game where they scored 30-plus points if the offensive line had some semblance of protection.
So Mankins returning to left guard would have made Sebastian Vollmer block Cameron Wake.
Yep.
You don't even believe your own crap.
Listen, we can all, debate the merits of the trade all we want, but I think that they would have been better up front if Mankins was there on Sunday. Now, I think they would have been
They
would have been better with Kelly up front on defense, too.
Obviously.
I don't think that was a good move.
At least they got something for Mankins.
And by the way, you can't accuse us of being 20-20 hindsight. We hated the Tommy Kelly transaction when it happened, even you.
Yeah.
I still don't understand it, by the way. I saw, you know, when this, somehow we all missed it, by the way. The story was like a week. It's like a week old, the story from ESPN Arizona. No, I know. And then I saw Jeff Howe, like, retweeted the story and said, now we have our answer.
No, you don't.
I mean,
we don't have any answer.
And see, that's the typical brainwashing thing that I'm talking about, or it goes on around
and
here.
I heard,
he wanted out.
Let him go, Fred. Let him go.
He wanted out because we wasn't. It looked like we weren't going to let him be a full-time
player. He's being brainwashed. Let him go.
I heard somebody say, well, you know, getting rid of Tommy Kelly, that's a good sign for Easley. Well, they're so different players. It's not like Tommy Easley's going to do what Tommy Kelly did.
Right.
They're completely different. One doesn't replace the other. Why not have both? You're always talking about versatility. Tommy Kelly gives you that versatility.
He would be a unique figure on this defensive line. There's nobody like him physically,
right.
experience-wise, anything.
Right.
And I and he only asked out, if you believe him, because he was seeing the writing on the wall, and
right.
he thought he was out.
They kept taking him out of the game. He would start, and he would come out.
Look, maybe after last Sunday's game, you would have no need for Tommy Kelly, but you could certainly have a need for him that game. Tommy
yes.
Kelly would have helped that effort on Sunday.
Indeed.
But you can't.
And you
even,
got nothing for him.
And I know
this
that
is like me talking about John Abraham
you
when they didn't sign John Abraham.
You,
these are guys that it just seems to me obvious that they add something to your team that you need.
But even worse, John Abraham didn't want to come here because he didn't like whatever role they were going to. You had Tommy Kelly. He was already here.
And he wanted to be here so bad he agreed to take a pay cut.
You got nothing for him. You just cut him. And then at final cuts, you claim two undrafted rookie free agent defensive linemen off waivers. Something doesn't seem
right.
copacetic through that whole process.
Right. Something was weird there. LaShawna from West Palm Beach. I knew the game was over when I saw Brady sulking on the sideline with his face in his hands while shaking his head. He is the leader of the team, and his body language was terrible. We were actually
yes, body language is back.
Yes, we were actually leading when he was basically crying about missing a wide open Edelman. Terribly disappointed in quarterback play for this game. And his leadership was also lacking considering these young players look at how he reacts or responds to adversity. So that's LaShawna.
I'm not usually a huge, body language guy, but that was, I think he's gotten a lot of criticism for this.
He did look like he was crying.
From what I've heard yesterday on the radio. And I agree with it this time. You know, in the first half, you know, everything was great. It was the Lego movie, and he's like he's slapping Gronkowski in the head. He's
an Oyo movie.
You know, he's all excited and all jacked up. You need to be that when things are sort of going the other way. I mean, anybody can lead when things are going great. He's supposed to be a great leader. They needed him on the sideline when the tide was turning in the second half, and Andy's right. I know he wasn't, but he had his head buried in a towel looking like he was crying.
Hey,
you're lucky we're not on Comcast right now because it would say Perillo, Brady great leader, question mark.
Hey, one of our – you guys listened to the broadcast.
Nope.
Oh, you didn't?
Oh, TV.
Yeah, TV.
Yeah.
Did they call Who-Man something other than Who-Man at one point?
I don't know. It's hard to hear
okay,
through
you
the
didn't,
snow.
Okay, I'm not even going to mention it.
What did he call? No, come
he
on.
He says Homo Man. He said they called him that.
Oh, I could see that happening.
On mistake.
I could see that happening.
I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear that either.
But doesn't mean it didn't
happen. Just said that.
It doesn't mean it didn't happen. But I don't remember hearing that.
All right. Let's
good line. Best line of the broadcast was Gumbel when Brady had a throw over the middle. Brady over the middle to no
to
one
no
in particular.
One in particular.
You don't like to see those from Tom Brady.
All right. Let's go to the. It was called safety in the Super Bowl, 2011.
Yeah.
Trey
is taking cheap shots at the quarterback.
No. At the referee.
No, this wasn't. This was thrown to people. This
yeah, this was like this, between bodies and
but
stuff.
But it was just between everybody. Like, you couldn't even tell who was intended for. It wasn't thrown to literally.
I think it was because he had the
opening.
Ball so far over the top
it
like
was
he was throwing a
breaking ball.
To no
one in particular, but there were a lot of people there.
When did you first notice this?
Last year. Yeah.
Last year?
Yep.
And you've just decided to bestow it upon us now?
I did, because I saw it again during the game. I'm like, man, it just looks so odd coming out of his. And. Usually you see it most pronounced on the sideline passes where he turns and it's a, you know, maybe a 6 yard pass downfield. And a lot of times it looks like he's about to go toward the middle, but the ball comes out in such a way that it's more of a sharper angle than it looks, you know, and that could be him just looking off for, you know, the coverage, but it does look strange coming out of his hand.
Okay, I'm going to keep an eye on it. That's one of my things to focus on moving forward.
Trey's in Memphis, and we're back to the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Trey. You all right?
Hey guys, how's it going?
Good.
Yeah.
Just wake up?
Man, actually, I'm on vacation, so, I mean, I've had a good night's sleep, so it's just been kind of, man, I got a lot of mixed emotions, man, about where our season is headed. You know, I got a few things I want to talk about. It was hard to see our defensive line get raked the way they did. And looking at the offensive line, just be totally molested, man. I mean, it was I didn't see that one coming. And, you know, to just – I mean, we didn't play with any tenacity, man. Didn't play with any fight. And, you know, and I look at – just looking at our schedule, man, and just looking at everybody – the way that everybody played Sunday, man, over half our schedule, man, the people have great defense. They can rush the quarterback, and they also have offensive lines that they can do well in the run game.
Well, those teams didn't have to play in Miami in September, so.
You know what?
Why doesn't everybody else have problems doing that, by the way? Miami doesn't have a great home record.
That's not an excuse.
Because they acknowledge the heat.
That's not an
excuse. We ignore it.
Man, I mean, yeah. I mean, that's not an excuse. I mean, because I've seen other teams. I mean, hell, I've seen the Jets go in there, man, and hit the
I'd like to know what Miami's record is at home the first half of September.
It's better. It absolutely is. They're better early in the season than late.
Well, I tweeted out yesterday, 89 degrees, fifth hottest season opener for Miami at home ever, and they're 10-2 in the 89 degrees or above.
Well, there
games.
You go. There you go.
Right. Well, guys, I mean, you know, we got, I mean, man, three turnovers early in the game, man. I mean, you got to put the game away. I mean, if you know that you're not conditioned well for it, I mean, just go ahead on and handle business, man. I mean, you know, stop whining, stop griping, and, you know, just to sit there, man, you know, it's depressing, you know, and it pisses me off to listen to Bill after every loss with that dead-ass voice. Oh, we didn't play right, you know. I mean, man, if you feel that way, no man, just get it right, man. I mean, just own up to it. I mean, we got the whole.
I think he does own up to it, but he just doesn't give us particulars, and it.
I mean, but it's the same thing, man, and it's depressing. And I mean, you know, I'm looking at other teams, man, and I'm like, okay, why can't we play with that kind of emotion and, you know, a tenacity, man? I mean,
I know. Trey, I hear you, but I'm telling you, it's going to come. That tenacity you're talking about, that aggressiveness for this defense, I'm still not giving up on what I saw and what I think it should be. I still think they're going to be one of the better defenses in the league. And, you know, you're going to see it this week in Minnesota. You're going to see a team that is fired up.
I mean, you probably will. This is a team that can't move the ball. So you probably will see, just like the first 3 weeks last year.
True enough. Let's
I'm just talking about attitude, Paul. I'm not talking about the end result.
When you play well, you have attitude. I thought they had all kinds of attitude on the practice field all summer. Yeah. This is what I was saying to the guy earlier who was saying, you know, Revis was a mercenary. I didn't see that in the summer. I saw the defense celebrating every big play they made because they were playing really well. They dominated the training camp practices. But they didn't play well the other day, so you don't have emotion.
Right, and plus
you're getting dominated, there's nothing to be emotional about.
Right.
Well, I got two more points, man. I'm going to get out of you guys here. Okay, if we don't go ahead on and fix this, man, you know, stop being soft. I mean, hell, it's cold. I mean, we have this problem in December sometimes. I mean, you know, depending on the team. I mean, man, we're going to have to, man, just grow some balls, man.
Yeah. All right, then. All right.
Some balls to just fight. And I'm going to say this, man. I thank God that we got PFW, man, to give us something to look forward to. I mean, because right now, I don't think our team is capable right now.
All right. Thanks, Trey.
So they're looking forward
Trey's
to us.
Trey's fired up. We need Trey out there.
Now
we'll be back next
Do
week.
You question the team's pride, fight, heart, half?
No.
Oh, some fans have.
The second half?
Some very low-ranking members of this organization did.
They had nothing in the tank.
Chris Pereira. I always go into Chris Pereira to get my immediate post-game reaction to a loss, and he goes, show some bleeping heart out there, why don't you? I was so frustrated.
Well,
he didn't think they showed any heart.
Well, I mean,
I don't think they showed much heart either, but I don't necessarily question their heart.
And it seems that way because they were gassed. They had nothing in the tank.
I agree,
nothing.
Freddie. I am with you.
I'm with you.
Well, Fred and I are normally aligned on things. We always argue with you.
Ramones in Dallas, I'm not jumping off the ledge. I'm also aware that playing the Dolphins in Miami is always difficult for us, but I listened to everyone repeatedly tell me that Brady is still great. Bill is the greatest. The organization is great. Gronkowski, Revis, etc., etc. These are great personnel that make up a great team. And I repeatedly have asked myself, where the bleep is the greatness when I need it the most? I don't need my team to be great against mediocre teams. I need my team to be great when their back is against the wall, like the Falcons Sunday. So if we truly are great, let's turn it around and have a great season.
Let's be like the Falcons.
If we can't do that, let's pump the brakes on the great Patriots talk, obviously historical, and objectively reduce us to just a good team.
The Falcons are soft as goo.
Right.
Historically.
Now all of a sudden we want to be the Falcons.
Right.
We really need to start thinking about the future because just like Paul and Eric, I believe our greatness is on the decline.
Yeah, like Paul and Eric.
I think he's talking about Brady.
No, I think he's talking about the two of you.
No, but well,
I know.
But we're talking about not the Patriots' decline, that Brady declined, yeah. Right? Okay.
Well,
because we had that big argument, remember,
know,
in the offseason,
right?
Right. Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you. I'm down with that, Freddie.
Olivier's on the Ace Ticket Hotline. Hey, Olivier.
I co-sign.
Hey, guys. This is Trey's brother. How are you?
What's up, Olivier?
What's going on?
Hey, so now that the preseason is over, what do you guys think?
It is?
I
hope it's over.
That was the fifth game.
I hope there's not a sixth game coming up.
Is there like any hope that we have that we can actually change pieces and upgrade, what we have? Do we need more talent? Is it, when I look at our competition and when I look at what, at this stage of the season, which is minuscule and which is very small with one sample game, when I see what the Broncos have done against a very, a pretty good team for the Colts, and when I look at what Seattle does, I wonder where we rank against that, our talent pool, our players, and our schemes. And is it a matter of us trying to adjust a few things to be able to get to where we're supposed to be? Or we are realizing after this game that we have deeper flaws than we initially thought, and therefore, we may have to change things to be able to be competitive. And then the second thing is, when we know that if Brady can throw the ball well and if he's on his A game, there is no way we lose the game, even though, we can be a 6 or 7 point deficit, because I know he can make these throws. But he's missing a lot of throws because it's been hit so many times and sacked, 4 or 5 times. So when we know that our best asset is Brady, it's still the same question as last year. Why don't we focus on protecting him better with better talent? What do you guys think?
Well, that's the key. I mean, it's always a shame when you see these quarterbacks in their twilight and they're not getting protection.
I know.
Especially guys like that have a hard time making anybody miss or buying any extra time for themselves in the pocket. With very few exceptions, I didn't think Brady moved well at all Sunday. Ironically, the touchdown, I thought, to Gronkowski, he did make a subtle little slide to his left, to his right, and then hit Gronkowski going across the middle. I think that bought him a little extra time on that play. But for the most part, he's not going to be able to do that consistently. And if the protection isn't better, I don't know if the accuracy is going to be that much better.
Yeah, and I feel bad for the guy, right? It's the same situation as last year, and you would think that, 1 year, okay, was a mistake. Now it seems like to be, I wonder what Belichick is doing. I mean, is he saying, well, it is what it is, and if it doesn't work out with that resource, we'll upgrade with Garoppolo, and it's going to take whatever it takes for us to be successful or whatever, and then, Brady is just a commodity that's declining right now, so therefore, if he doesn't work out, we'll trade him. And I thought his interview that aired before the game was pretty telling when he says, there is no doubt in my mind that I would be traded if I don't play at a high level. Now, if you don't protect him, he's not going to play at a high level. So is there something to think about this, that maybe these talks already have taken place? I don't know, food for thought.
Well, he also said he didn't plan on sucking anytime
soon. Thanks, Olivier.
The first game after saying that, he sucked.
Right. Well, hey.
That was Andy.
See, Paul, I can say when he sucked. I don't generalize and say he always sucks in January.
No, I didn't say he always sucks in January.
Oh, now you're backtracking off that.
Usually.
Let's go to Eddie in Maryland.
Hey, wait, time out real quick.
In fact, I think you got the calendar mixed up. Thought yesterday.
Hold on, Eddie. January. 1 week into the season, after everybody in the world said the Patriots are among the best two teams in football, I mean in the AFC, and they're going to just roll into the AFC title game, you're a hypocrite if you say, well, they're not as talented as other teams. Well, a week ago, you thought they were among the most talented teams because you thought they were going to roll.
Well, you thought, but what I think Olivier said.
But you don't change that after a week.
No, but you can't make that snapshot judgment off of 1 week.
And I'm not talking either.
I'm not talking one game. I'm talking any one game during the course of the season.
Right.
If they score 50 in Minnesota, they suddenly, they're that talented team again.
Right. Well, it'll be just as off on the other direction next Tuesday. Listen, I thought that Denver looked improved to me from what little I watched the other night.
I thought Talib looked good.
He did.
That's a number one corner.
He did play well. But again, let's see if he can hold up, because we saw that last year the first 5 or 6 weeks and he couldn't hold up.
Right, like Revis in the fourth quarter in the Heat.
Exactly. Well, even worse, I don't think Revis looked like that before he couldn't hold up.
Hydrate up, son.
Ice up.
I know, but Revis was
Eddie, what do you got?
I altered it to fit the situation. Can you keep up, Peterson Patterson?
Oh, no, you're going to ask him, because he didn't finish the game. Ice up, son. Ice up.
Hydrate, son. Hydrate.
That was a great line.
Everybody's making some very good points. on the show, but except Fred, I think you're dead wrong on one thing, man.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, unfortunately, the whole thing about the defense thing, and I don't know why you guys, the media, they don't harp on this enough, but I keep calling you guys and telling you the same thing. This defense is just not going to be great. I had the false hope that somehow he was going to change somehow, but Bill is never going to change. He does not believe in the attacking style defense. You know, what we're doing on defense, I have no idea. Why would you get rid of Tommy Kelly when you could have had him and Easley and Chandler Jones and Ninkovich, four-man front, and the linebackers aggressively up front? Why don't you do this with your defense when you know that, you know, what you've been doing the past 6 years is not working? You know, you brought in Darrell Revis, and you're not pressing with him in the other corners and attacking with the front. You're not doing that. Until Bill realizes that, which he's never going to realize, the defense is going to be okay. Never going to be great. And I fell for that. I thought somehow maybe, you know, this is the year. You know, we got some guys. But that guy doesn't get it, man. And for whatever reason, the media just doesn't call him on that. They just say, oh, he's great. He's the only defensive coordinator who does what he does. No other defense in the NFL plays the way the Patriots play. Now, watching the games last night, those four defenses, they're all attacking. The Patriots are the only ones who don't attack. I don't get it.
Well, it's tough to make conclusions off of that game.
Was that a quick bye guys at the end?
Wait a minute. Why?
Because they just weren't playing well, the heat in the second half.
But what about the style?
I think in the first half they were playing pretty well.
But you thought they played pretty well defensively in the first half?
Yeah.
I thought they forced turnovers in the first half. I don't think they played particularly well. I mean, I thought that Miami looked very similar offensively in the first half, but short-circuited their drives with turnovers. Now, I already said, I thought the Patriots forced the turnovers. But Lamar Miller ran 17 yards when Logan Ryan knocked the ball out of his hands. You know, it's not the same necessarily as like Vince Wilfork shooting the gap and dropping a guy in the backfield that causes a fumble.
Yeah, they're not playing that penetrating, you know, one gap technique or whatever it is. But
just so you know, Miami didn't punt until late in the fourth quarter.
But I think this, you know, you talked about that Jets game, that 16-9 game. I think the Patriots again outsmarted themselves in this game. You know, I know they weren't talking about the heat, but I think
that was my point.
The whole plan about, you know, rotating guys, I think they wanted a game plan that they thought they could sustain for 60 minutes in that heat. And it turns out they couldn't. They couldn't even do that.
But I think people are being too easy on the defense. That's all. I think that defense, I think everybody just, you know, they added Revis, who was better than Tlaib. We all agree. And everybody just automatically assumed that guys coming back from injury were going to make them a top five defense. I don't care what the statistics say at the end of the year. They're one of the better teams in the league, so statistically, they're going to be in a good position. But I don't necessarily see this dominant defense. I don't see the makings of a dominant defense. I don't see any similarities at all.
You don't see the makings of one.
I don't see any similarities at all with their personnel in Seattle's or San Francisco's.
Well, it's a different type
Carolina's
of defense,
for
sure.
Or Carolina's, yeah, those are good.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Now, again, statistically,
let him roll.
Statistically, it might end up being, I could absolutely see the Patriots being in charge of games, being out in front, you know, against, you know, the majority of the teams that they play, dictating the way the game is going to go and coming out with defensive numbers that look fine and maybe even top five. But I don't think that they are a smothering, attacking, athletic defense that's going to really make you look bad. Right. It's going to submit you into three and out, three
well,
and
that's
out.
That's what
three
we're
and
hoping
out.
For. I
don't
still think
I don't think
I
they
will.
Have the talent for that.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you might be right, but I don't think I'm not ready to give up on that, you know, after this game.
I didn't say anything about giving up. I'm not giving up on the season or anything like
no,
that.
No, no, no. I'm just talking about having a top 5 defense.
I think that we've changed
truly
one player.
A top 5 defense.
We've changed we got a great cornerback to replace a very good one. And that was the difference between us being 26th in the league on third down to being top 5?
Yeah, we'll see.
I don't see it.
Okay.
Read some emails.
Let's want to read an email?
Yes. People get mad.
Elvis says we should be worried about Wilfork after that game, and they had him pass rushing in obvious passing downs. Why? Wilfork is no pass rusher at this stage in his life.
So. I agree with that. That's part of what I'm talking about. Like, having him back isn't, like, to me, a piece of, oh, now they're really going to get after it. They got Wilfork back. Wilfork is a run-stuffing space eater. He's good at it, but I don't think that he's not a guy that's going to turn in, you know, like, you know, these eye-opening plays for you in the backfield and, you know, getting five, six, Geno Atkins type pressure on the passer.
Seth writes in, hey guys, in Giddy, I assume Eric, although he calls him Erica. a cynical but real question. If you can't stop the run or rush the passer and at the same time can't protect the quarterback, what else is there to do? Plus, the Bills and Jets defensive lines are probably as good or better. Pack it in. I have us 8-8, missing the playoffs.
Who's this?
Seth. And people comparing the defense to 03-04 is effing laughable. That defensive line was elite. This one is pathetic.
Wow. I didn't think we would get any emails like that today. I really didn't.
Jack in New Hampshire.
The point about the defensive lines in the division is valid, by the way.
Oh,
yeah, we talked about it last week.
The AFC East stinks.
Oh, yeah, they're built to beat Brady.
But there's one thing that they, Buffalo, the Jets, and Miami all have good defensive lines.
Yep.
So if you don't fix your stuff up front, I'm just saying.
What are you saying? Why don't you say something?
Maybe the AFC East to be a little bit more competitive than any of us thought.
You got the Patriots down to 8-8?
No.
Jack?
No.
Jack in New Hampshire.
I got them 12-4. I haven't changed.
I'm in no way an Amendola apologist, but on the Gronkowski touchdown, Amendola was open in the end zone before Gronk even made the crossing pattern.
No, he wasn't. I know exactly that play, and I saw it. He was not open. He did a quick out and was covered.
I think the problem was Brady's determination to throw to Gronk every time he was on the field. I'm sure you all saw the stat that Brady was only 2-for-17 on throws over 15 yards, and even the long reception to Edelman was underthrown. And when Brady overthrew Kendrell Tompkins, who was completely stretched out in the air like a Superman attempting to make the catch, it looked as though Brady was lecturing Kendrell on the way to the sideline.
Yep.
It can't always be the receiver's fault, can it?
Yep.
Why do you think Brady is struggling with the long ball over the past couple of years?
He always has. Yeah. And I also think yesterday, I'm going to give him a little bit of an out. I think he had a major calf injury that was affecting him.
Yeah.
And as you roll forward, I don't know.
Might not be the same play, but I think that Amendola was covered on that touchdown play. And then he ended up being a broken play, and he circled back, and he ended up being inside Gronk, and he was the first guy to get to Gronk after.
Well,
I don't think he was open.
If that was the play, then.
I don't think he was
even
open.
Even if Amendola was open, Brady was under pressure anyway, so he probably.
Well, he had time on that particular play. That was the one I was talking about that he did a nice job.
But he made his own time.
Well, he just sort of moved a little bit. He had all day to throw. That was a long developing play. That was a good play by everybody all around.
Jennifer writes,
except for Brent Grimes, who for some reason stopped as he was cutting across.
Treated it like he was tailing somebody in a car and didn't want to get too close.
Jennifer writes, and just a comment on the conversation going on about the starting lineup. For the first time ever, I felt like we had nothing but rookies on the field. I was completely confused as to who our starters were on the team.
There's a lot of starting jobs that are not clear.
We had new starters, I suppose. I mean, I don't think we had.
They're not all rookies.
I don't think we had many rookies on the field, but
you know,
they were guys that haven't had a lot of experience. So, your point is taken.
Brian in Essex, Joe Vermont. Vermont. Here's another problem I saw that hasn't been talked about: 9 penalties for 100, as in yards given up. You could argue that number should be dramatically higher because the Patriots defense did get away with at least 2 pretty egregious penalties. Can't remember who was covering. But there was a play where Butler got a hand on pass to the sideline while his other arm was completely wrapped around the guy's neck.
Yep.
They came at some pretty bad times, too. Jones roughing calls, for example, to extend drives or kill offensive drives, for that matter. The Patriots have so many things to fix this week. How do you see it panning out?
I'd be stunned if they played such a undisciplined style again with the penalties. That's not something that is typical of a Belichick team, but he's right, and there was Logan Ryan got away with an interference in the end zone. LaFell probably should have gotten called for an offensive interference that prevented an interception.
Dolphins didn't get away with any penalties?
No, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did. But they got 9 penalties, and you'd be hard-pressed to look at replays and say, wow, that was a tough call.
Oh, they had some pretty blatant penalties.
And there was some pretty blatant ones not called that the emailer just brought out. I forgot about that Butler one. He had him around the head.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Jeff in Pennsylvania, it was incredibly hot in Buffalo for the season opener. I was there. Spikes and several others left the game with heat exhaustion. We should not have won that game, so it doesn't surprise me that we lost this one. Patriots aren't good in the heat.
Last year, you're talking
about?
If
you can't take the heat.
Yeah, listen.
It's probably not going to be hot in Minnesota.
Fred brought it up, and Miami is very good in September and October home games.
Oh yeah,
traditionally, I think that's a big advantage.
They
for
make
them.
It, strippers actually told me, and I'm basing this on him, so I'm hoping he was truthful, that they made an announcement at Sun Life prior to the game that the heat index was going to be 105. Be smart, particularly if you're wearing dark-colored clothing.
Right.
And he said he giggled because the Patriots obviously had dark blue jerseys on.
Keith in Tampa, hey, guys, what do you make of Tommy Kelly's comments that he kind of asked for his release after he thought Bill was cutting his playing time due to incentives he could have earned? Here's his quote for those who haven't seen it. Quote, I saw what was going on, Kelly said. I mean, you're starting me, but you're taking me out. I don't know why you're taking me out. I had a situation with my deal, and I saw what he was doing, so I got on my agent, and we got together, and I was just happy. I'd hate to think that we hurt our chances of beating the Dolphins over relatively small amounts of money. I would, too.
Nothing?
What?
Well, you were the one that...
The incentive.
Posted
no,
that.
I'm already. I mean, yeah. I. You can't sell me on why you cut Tommy Kelly.
But again,
this is sort of
according to Kelly. It's not just.
Yeah, I think
I was upset about playing time.
He's introducing another element.
Oh, yeah, right.
It's money.
I know. Yeah, money.
Because I agreed to you. I agreed to earn my money.
Right.
I took my pay cut so I could earn my money, and now you're not going to let me earn it.
Now you're cutting off your nose to spite your face.
Right. And I think that there's probably some truth to that.
That's why I used the word phased out.
And I also think that it's you know. Like Andy brought up that Jeff Howe tweeted out with that story that explains it. And I would say that explains nothing.
Right. Because it actually confuses it.
Because why Belichick was looking to cut his playing time when you don't have the answers.
God forbid a guy earn his incentives.
You know,
right? Because he's your best player in that position. Right. He should be on the field. You know, God forbid.
We talked about that with Vince.
Got to play Joe Valano. Got to put a
Vince
meatball out
there.
Vince
has some incentives involved in some of that stuff, too. And you know,
well, if they don't play Vince, then it's just ridiculous.
But he's worried about it. You
he
know?
Shouldn't be, because then it's over. I'm sorry. Then it's over. If you have no defensive lineman now, and if you decide to limit Vince Wilfork based on incentives, it's over. You've lost focus on what matters, and everything is
done. You're not here to win.
Right.
Right. Maurice is in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Maurice.
Hey, guys. What's going on?
Mo!
Hey, just want to comment on a couple of things. We'll never be a elite defense until Bill Belichick gets some of these undrafted guys out of the starting lineup. I don't mind them being on the team, but they don't need to be starting, especially Joe Valano. In a 3-4, if you're going to have three defensive linemen controlling the line of scrimmage, you can't be one of the guys. Me and my wife, we were at the game Sunday, and it was so hot that we left with exactly 7 minutes and 34 seconds to go in the game because it was so hot. So the weather, in my opinion, did play a factor in the game. Joe Valano, especially of all people, after his second defensive series, he was on the sideline sucking on oxygen bottles. So I was like 10 rows up behind the Patriots bench. So I saw had guys laying down, getting their thighs rubbed and stuff. And I'm assuming that had something to do with France.
Yeah, we'll go with that. Yeah, no, I think the heat was clearly an issue. And a guy who, you know, his nickname is Meatball is probably going to be a guy that could have some exhaustion and heat and oxygen issues. And that's not even to take into account his talent level. Is he a worthy starting end?
My only question is, what would your starting defensive line be?
Mine?
Yeah. Well,
Tommy Kelly.
Okay, but that's not a possibility. He's
it was.
I know,
no,
but
no.
He's not here
don't,
now.
Don't act like something took him away. It's not like the situation at tight end a year ago where things got taken away.
Fred, I'm glad you didn't have anything else to say about that Tommy Kelly.
He's just what talking about now. You're right.
We all agree with you.
If I'm the man writing the starting
who are
lineup,
you arguing with
it means I'm also the man who makes the cuts.
I know.
Which means I could have Tommy Kelly as my starting level defensive
end. But in week two in Minnesota, who would you start at offensive defensive line? And please don't say Tommy Kelly because he's playing for Arizona.
I bet you he starts. Did he? I don't even know.
I don't know.
I don't like my. I would probably start left defensive end Rob Ninkovich, defensive tackle Vince Wilfork, defensive tackle Dominic Easley, and right defensive end Chandler Jones. I'd be in a 4-3.
Yeah, I agree.
I would too.
I would be in a 4-3
because I think that's the best use of my personnel. Because now I have Easley is not a stout guy, but I'm putting him next to my tree trunk. He's sort of that off defensive tackle.
And I also like Salinga being next to Vince inside better than I do. As a 3-4 end.
Especially since he admitted he can't grab anybody.
Five technique.
He's got a club in it that's bothering him that he can't grab anybody with.
You know,
he was the other guy that was in the backfield with Vince on the Marino touchdown run. He actually beat his man, too.
Yeah. I think that in terms of being stout against the run, Salinga's probably the best of those three guys from last year. Jones, Valano, Salinga. Salinga's probably the most stout against the run.
Assuming he can play with his club.
Right.
The fact that he voiced concern about that is concerning to me. But still, the best defensive tackle,
or end in a 3-4 would be Tommy Kelly.
Johnny in L.A., I have a message for a man whom many consider to be the single greatest Patriot asset of all time, Robert Kraft. Mr. Kraft, I'll keep it short and sweet. You need to hire a general manager. There is a young talent flourishing all over this league, and we're stuck with watching Bill the Genius Belichick and his merry band of value picks. What an absolute travesty. In my humble opinion, the joyride is all but over. TB12 is no longer playing at an elite level and therefore cannot cover up for Belichick's drafting deficiencies. So I believe we're in for a long, difficult season. A seventh-round converted quarterback.
I'm stunned by these emails.
Yeah,
I'm not.
A seventh-round converted quarterback as your number one wideout, a 265-pound defensive tackle, a free safety who you mistakenly drafted as a corner, crap choice after crap choice at strong safety, Ninko riding the pine, an abortion of an offensive line. It's also utterly depressing.
Always.
How about the next time Belichick verbally bitch slaps and humiliates one of you guys or one of your fellow reporters at a presser, you actually man up instead of cowering down to the god you treat him as and stand up for yourselves asking him, hey, genius, how are all those Rutger picks working out for you? Johnny in L.A.
It won't be us, but...
it's a cult.
Yeah.
Won't be anybody.
Paul, you were surprised that we're getting these emails?
I'm surprised
not.
That we've gotten...
You should have seen the blog.
That's Well,
I mean,
not,
they were calling me a pussy.
No, well, I
they were.
I do too all the time.
Look at
you,
got a
stupid immobilizer on your leg. No,
you got her playing tennis with a couple girls
during the game. I'm not surprised by any negativity that you get because that's you know, heat of the moment emotion. I'm surprised.
Like Fred.
You've read at least three emails that sort of are indicating that it's over.
Mm-hmm.
Like 8-8, it's over. Like they're not going anywhere this year. Whereas Andy, in the middle of that email, I think accurately said, go to the AFC Championship game. Because I don't really see a scenario that they don't go to the AFC Championship game unless, you know, there's a major...
Unless they play
major,
like that again.
Major injuries. I don't... Do you expect that? Do you expect them to give up 200 yards rushing every week? I don't.
No, but you mock me for saying I'll be the last to expect them to fall off the map. Because that's 12. Well, that starts with number 12. When they fall off the map...
Brady's already down a little bit. You're just the last to know it.
No, but in all seriousness, when they fall off the map... He is going to be the anchor that's dragging them down, right? In all likelihood, he's
Belichick or Brady.
Brady. He's the balloon who has lifted him over everything before. He's going to be the anchor. He's going to be the sandbag, whatever you want to call it, to continue my analogy. And I am on record as saying I still think he's good.
Well, I still think he's good. Too.
I still think he had a good summer. I still think he looked youthful and energetic and accurate. I think he has a major calf injury.
Well, I think that most of that stuff is true. I don't know.
I don't think he was at Letterman with Giselle on Thursday. I don't think he was manipulating the injury report. I think he had a calf injury.
What kind of injury? Oh. And this is a question. It's not, I'm not arguing. What kind of calf injury would you have that allows you to look fine jogging and walking, but would affect you?
Have I been shot with Toradol?
Yeah, I don't know. What is?
Don't you think that he probably had something?
Yeah, is that what it is?
Oh, I don't know for sure, but my speculation is he had a calf injury on Thursday. On Sunday, he was treated so that he could play, which, A, can take the pain away, but sometimes you can't, you know, dealing with the not feeling the pain can be a little weird, too. I think that affected him. I'm an apologist. I'm Brady apologist. Go all in.
And I am, too. I mean, despite the fact
except in January.
Well, I think that he has been not at his best in January, and I think that has been the reason that they've had trouble getting over the hump. That's the only thing that I think I would differ from most other people. I'm a huge Brady apologist.
This looked a lot like January, huh?
But one of the problems.
I was just thinking about it. Like they're always competitive in the first half, or a lot of times competitive in the first half. Things go south. They fade. He can't make the plays. He's under pressure. Guys are.
But the difference is in January, it's a good team on the other side.
This might be a good team.
No.
Fred tells me every year you can't judge a schedule until it's over.
No, I understand that, but
buying Joe Philbin?
Based on what I saw from Ryan Tannehill, that was not a good offense that they played that they couldn't stop. He missed, and even some of the passes he completed, they ended up having to kick one of the chip shot field goals because he had Lamar Miller all alone in the left flat. He threw it on his back shoulder, made him spin all the way around, and eventually fell down. And then about 5 minutes later, someone came over and put a hand on his helmet.
You know who was leading this charge? Trent Green. I feel like I'm beating on Ryan Tannehill here, and I don't mean to be, but if he makes this, he kept saying, like, time after time,
he had about five completions
that
if he put on the target, would have been big plays.
Well, so did Brady. Not five, but, well, yeah, maybe five. I don't know. The one to Edelman could have been a touchdown.
Yeah.
The one to Gronk could have been a touchdown. That's two off the top of my head.
I'm not talking about incompletions. I'm talking about completions.
No,
the one to Edelman would have been a touchdown if Brady threw it accurately.
So it's the same thing.
Let's go to Todd in Toronto. Hey, Todd.
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
Better than the team.
Give me answer again. I'm sure of it. Damn him.
Anyway, guys, from what I've seen,
the good defenses out there are the defenses that look like the 03-04 Patriots. They're aggressive. They got a good linebacker core. They can get pressure without blitzing. It's all the good stuff that you want to see in a team.
Yes.
I would agree with
that. And we don't have that right now, certainly not based on Sunday.
And when my other little thing is, let's stop depending on Brady. Seriously, man. I said this in the preseason. You guys kind of made fun of me, and I know you guys like making fun of me. That's kind of the way the shtick works.
It's because you sound funny.
Well, yeah, I know. I said, we need to stop the run, and I said, we need a run. We need a good running setup. We need to have Blunt in there. And when he left, I said, how are we going to replace him? And you guys went, oh, well, we'll do it by committee. We'll do it by this. And I was like, oh, I don't think so, but I believe in you guys, and
that is how they ran last year by committee.
You know,
Blunt had those two big games in the slosh.
I mean, him and Ridley split carries. They basically ended up like 30 or 40 carries apart.
Weren't they a yard apart?
And they were
a
yard apart for their production. Yeah. Now they didn't replace Blunt. I agree with you on that. So they're short a member of the committee, but
yeah.
I don't listen. If you're going to rely on them just running the ball, they don't have the personnel for it. They don't.
Oh God!
And you got rid of your best run blocker, so it's going to make it all that much more difficult.
Most of the good teams use the run to set up the pass. There's one or two exceptions, and with Brady getting older, we need that. We need to have a running game that can bang off.
I think most of the good teams use the pass to set up the run.
Well, nowadays,
I think there's two.
You're playing nowadays.
I think there are two good teams that are predominantly running teams, and that's Seattle and San Francisco. They both have absolute dominant defenses.
Right, the two best defenses in football.
Everybody else, to me, passes to set up the run.
I think we took it to Todd there.
No, listen, I think Todd has some legitimate concerns, and I'm not overlooking them. But at least, unlike some of the other people that seem to have been completely given up on the rest of the season, I think Todd is looking at things that they can do differently to get back to where they need to be.
By the end of the season, we won't be looking at other teams saying, I wish we had that.
Well, you know what? No, the simple answer is, you started with it, Fred.
Well, I'll be looking at Seattle.
You win in this league by getting after the quarterback. And I think Todd is telling, you know what, get after the quarterback. Well, the guy who we're supposed to see getting after the quarterback was taking on a tackle. You know, he was man up with a tackle and playing sort of an end line position. I think Chandler Jones is one of your answers. Get after it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of what we saw. And by the way, this may change again. Maybe they think Chris Jones and Dominic Easley, when they're at full health, they're in that rotation, and now Chandler Jones is back in the linebacker rotation. But we saw it in the third preseason game. Chandler Jones playing outside linebacker looked dominant. For the first time in his National Football League career, looked dominant.
Did you see that one play? Not that Hightower had any great game, or that this play made a difference, but he was rushing the quarterback, and there was one guy between him and the quarterback, and he just absolutely threw this guy aside like he wasn't even mm-hmm. there.
I thought he looked pretty good in flashes.
Yeah,
I thought he and Jamie Collins displayed some athletic versatility, and I wrote this on one of our update things.
One of the things that flashed
that
me.
Could be
Hightower.
Part of an overall good defense. Now, if you add Chandler Jones into that mix, and if you add Darrell Revis being better into that mix, I thought those two guys, Collins and Hightower, flashed a little bit of what they could be with help. Conversely, I thought Patrick Chung was used as a sort of slot blitzer off the edge and looked like my boy James Sanders. He just kind of jogged up, saw somebody to block him, and patty cakes with the blocker. Nothing.
Let's go to Ken in North Carolina. Hey, Ken.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
Better
than the team.
Anyway, obviously there was absolutely nothing of Sunday that I could even think of was possibly good. I mean, the conditioning was bad. The lines were bad, both offensive and defensive. And frankly, we should have pulled Tom out, I think, in the third quarter and left Flo.
Wow.
Get out there and show his stuff.
Wow.
Jimmy Garoppolo era.
Over 100 yards. The trades that we made, I mean, we gave away Logan Mankins, who would have been in a lot of guys' faces on Sunday, And what do we have? Powder puffs out there going, oh, gee, it's so hot. We're going to Minnesota next week, and it's cold in Minnesota.
I don't think it's
so
cold this time.
We already have an excuse for next week, don't we?
Well, I'm not sure it's cold in September.
We're going to be playing in a college stadium.
That's the excuse.
So the visiting locker room would be terrible.
And we didn't know where the play clock was.
Good, Fred.
Right?
There
we didn't know where the
go.
Play clock was.
Right. Yeah, we got all our excuses in line. I think we better start looking at what is going on with our coaches.
Now, head coaches or assistant coaches?
Take out Brady in the third quarter, and what's going on with the coach now?
Why he didn't pull him?
Oh, you don't really think that Brady should have been pulled from that game, do you?
At the end in the third quarter, I mean, he didn't do anything for the whole.
No, I know he had a terrible second half, but you're advocating taking him out before he had said terrible second half. You wanted to take him out in the third quarter.
Well, I would have taken him out, and I would have put Garoppolo in there. You can always take Garoppolo back out. I'm just saying that.
I can't co-sign, Andy. Co-sign on that.
I'm not asking.
You're frustrated, Ken. You're frustrated.
Friend, you have every right to be.
I'm frustrated just like Ken, but I don't want to take the quarterback out.
There's a problem with the coaching.
So what?
I'm tired of hearing the same thing at the end of the game. Well, we have to work harder.
Me too.
We have to work. Well, what are you going to do when you're working harder? I'm tired. Listen, I've been watching this team since 1960.
And you're upset about the way the last 15 years have gone?
You know what? I'll tell you what. Yeah, that's me.
Yeah, you tell Paul to stick it. Tell Perillo to stick it. He's a wise ass.
I suffered for 30 years watching him to begin with.
And this has not been, like, rewarding for that? Yeah. I mean, really. Fred, you're right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm not going to argue with you anymore.
Thanks, Ken.
Oh, so you're going to say get rid of Belichick 5 years after you should have. I see how it is, Paul.
I can
be late to the quarterback and we mock me, but you can't be late to the coach.
I think Belichick coached a suspect game the other day. I think the game plan was not the greatest.
And, how did Don Shula end in Miami?
And I think the whole thing...
Poorly.
Okay.
How did Chuck Knoll end in Pittsburgh?
Okay.
Poorly.
Why don't you do yourself a history
how
lesson?
How did... What's the other guy's name?
I'm going to try to answer your question.
Tom Landry.
Why don't you instead... Yeah, I know that you know nothing that happened before you were born, so why don't you go back and check the last 5 years of those guys?
I don't know.
Tell me if they went to the AFC Championship game every year before they were unceremoniously dumped.
What if this is the year when... He stinks. He's falling
okay.
Off
well, let's wait for that.
Then that'll be 1 year.
Right.
And as they say, I can't kill him for something that hasn't happened yet.
They don't say that. That stupid show
let's
you're on.
Let's see if it happens before we do it.
Well, it just happened.
They lost the game.
Oh my God! And he's laughing because he doesn't even believe his own.
I know he doesn't, but.
I just appreciate
there seems to
Ken's
be a little bit
passion.
Of a groundswell of this mindset.
Oh, I
appreciate Ken's passion.
I do too, and I'm not here to tell
and
anybody.
And I can appreciate someone being frustrated after every loss hearing.
And here's
we just
got
to coach
and
better.
Frustrated
we're
to the point where Brady needed to be yanked from that game in the third quarter? Frustrated to the point where we need a coaching change?
I don't think it's ridiculous to yank an injured quarterback.
But I think what people
you really are an apologist.
I think what's adding to people's frustration is we started this season the way we kind of ended last season. Being dominated, not being able to put anything together on offense, and being bitch slapped on defense. And that's how we're starting this season. And I think.
But we really didn't start the season. We started the second half of the first game.
But
it was 20
it's
to
the
10.
We had forced three turnovers.
We're making plays.
I know, but it's just the way, you know, the game ended and, you know, we just completely fell apart. And so I think that's what people are, you know, frustrated, and I think it's subconscious. They don't know it, but they're thinking about that last game in Denver, and that's a continuation now into this game. And
I think it's the expectations. I think Mike Felger on the radio saying this is going to be a wagon.
Well,
they're going to roll. It's like 07 all over again. They're going to kill people, and the first game they play, they get killed.
And I'm guilty of that, and I still think they're going to be fine.
I do too.
Yeah.
Well, thinking they're going to be fine and thinking they have a wagon that it's unstoppable and not the same thing.
Well, they're going to have an AFC wagon and they're going to be in the AFC Championship game.
Okay, but that's not what Felger thinks. Felger thinks that it's an absolute disappointment if they don't win the Super Bowl.
Well, I mean,
disappointing season if they don't win the Super Bowl.
You know, right now you have to say Seattle's a better team than the Patriots.
What about Denver? Right now,
and right now Denver too.
And let's just look in the AFC.
Well, Felger doesn't buy that.
A lot of the contenders in the AFC either lost or struggled. this week to open the weekend. You know, San Diego, some people think they're a team.
New Orleans,
in the AFC. The Colts went into Denver and didn't look great. Defensively didn't look great. The Bengals had to come back to get a win in Baltimore. You know, those two teams are sort of dogfighting it out.
I actually think if you like the Colts.
Who's to say that the Dolphins aren't gonna, somebody's not gonna be good who we think's good.
Right. And somebody's gonna be good who isn't.
If you were high on the Colts going in, I'd be very, if you were high on the Colts going into the season, I would come out very encouraged.
No.
To go
Robert
to Denver,
Mathis tore his Achilles breastfeeding.
To go to Denver and fall behind 24-0 and then have the ball with 3 minutes left to tie the game, I think that shows you something. Patriots did that at home, and they were able to pull it off and win against Denver. If, you know,
all right, that's going to do it for this edition of PFW in Progress.
Is the weak part of the team,
question. If you've been trying to call in, don't hang up. John Rook and the Patriots Playbook will be here to take your calls from 2 to 4.
Lot to nitpick.
As well as your emails at webradio@patriots.com. And then after John is the Fantasy Football Champs to talk about your first week of fantasy football. I'm sure a lot of people are happy with what Calvin Johnson did last night.
I'm talking to John.
All right, John, have a good show. We have to get going.
Friend.
We have to film our TV show. We'll be back
TV
tomorrow.
Stars. No.
That was another unpredictable edition of PFW in Progress, the podcast for informed Patriots fans worldwide. Like what you heard from the PFW boys? Then support the show and follow your team even more closely by subscribing to the paper that makes the podcast possible, Patriots Football Weekly. Get your subscription right now by calling 1-800-494-PATS or by logging on to pfwonline.com. There's even a web-only international option for Patriots fans outside the U.S. PFW in Progress, brought to you by the writers of Patriots Football Weekly.